Live from the Toad Hop Network studios
in Hollywood.
This
is the ToadHopNetwork.com.
A place of our own without a lot of parents peering down our backs.
Radio worth watching.
And here we go.
Hello, Schmoville. What's going on? It's the Schmoes No Movies Podcast. I am Christian Harloff.
And I'm Mark Ellis.
Yes, you are.
Ah, it feels good to be back on the West Coast. I raise a toast to my co-host.
Well, welcome back, my friend. It's nice to have you back. How was Zany's?
It was great. I'll tell you this. I was in D.C. telling some jokes, fixing some government.
Yep.
And then I was in Chicago. There's a huge Schmoville following in Chicago.
I know. That's what you were telling me.
That I was unaware of. And it doesn't matter if they were fans of the videos or the podcast first. They all come up to me and they say the same thing. Hey, I love the videos when Christian and Mark Riley are doing the reviews together.
Yeah,
so,
I understand.
I guess you guys are having a lot of fun while I'm out of town.
Don't stop being modest. There are a lot of comments of "we miss Ellis" on somewhere. I guess it was another video on someone else's page.
Save Ellis.
All right, guys, it's the Schmoes No Movie Show. Really fun show tonight. We have Tim Dowling, a screenwriter that has been doing a lot of stuff lately. He's worked with Chris Columbus, had the Midnight Run sequel in the works. We work with Adam Sandler a lot. We're going to talk to him.
He writes screenplays in Hollywood.
He does indeed. We at the around 8:30 area, we're going to do some Wild Man TV, and Ben Bagley's going to be joining us.
Our good buddy, very funny comedian, Ben Bagley.
Yeah.
But there's something different, and you know,
what's
Christian,
fun?
I was in Chicago, and I was thinking, I know somebody that hails from that city, and it's not Michael Jordan, because he hasn't written me back.
Mr. T from Rocky III?
You know, I'd love that to be true. That's not either.
No.
It is, in fact, our co-host taking the place of Tiffany Smith this week, the one, the only, the beautiful Miss Kathy Kelly.
Oh, well, that's
Thank
good.
Thank you. I thought you were going to say Betty White. She's from Chicago, too, and we kind of look alike. So.
Kathy Kelly from AfterBuzz TV is here. She's a Schmoville favorite. We're happy to have you tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having
Repping
me.
The Chicago Bulls shirt.
Johnny, give me a little
volume.
You do
have fans in Chicago.
From
Chicago.
We have Schmoville fans. Yeah, you're from Chicago. You're out here now.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Kathy. We got a great 2-hour podcast for you tonight. And the whole gang is here, I guess, except for Tiffany. So it's good to be back in L.A. doing the podcast where I'm home.
You know, Mark, also, you know, you mentioned that before about how Schmoville was coming up to you and mentioned the podcast and everything, too. And
attacking me.
There's a great – someone just sent this to me before we got here today, and I retweeted it on our Twitter feed. There is Thomas Hughes wrote a blog about just how criticism is today and how kind of YouTube has changed. He wrote a lot of nice stuff about us in there, and I retweeted that if you guys want to read it. It's really good. But Schmoville has been active, really active lately. And one of the things that we've done, we did a contest. And we're going to tell a little later about this contest that we had Schmoville actually review our podcast.
Yeah, but I wasn't allowed to be in the reviews. Because, like, I've been on the road for most of these since you started. You started doing the reviews of the podcast when I was out of the podcast.
Yeah.
And so that kind of concerned me a little bit that maybe I was on the outs, or that maybe I would start to be one of the kids reviewing it as opposed to being on the show.
No.
That's not the case.
That's not the case. And we're gonna tell you guys who the winner was. And that winner, there were so many good ones. I mean, because, again, there was George McCann and Leanne and a guy named Cobster and all these people who did all these reviews. And we're going to tell you who the winner was tonight. And that person down the road will get a segment on the show where they're going to be quizzing us about the podcast.
Oh, lucky them.
That's a big deal.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be nice to have to talk to the person and kind of see what they did, because they really did great reviews. If you want to see the reviews, you go to our YouTube.com/Schmoes No. Go to the playlist, Schmoville Reviews the Podcast. But one of Schmoville's favorite segments on the show, and to be honest, Mark, our favorite segment is the pit boss himself sitting there looking like a Russian mobster. Here is the news. Let's do it.
Okay, now talking these are your Schmoes No headlines brought to you by Magic Hat Brewing Company in a story first reported on SchmoesNo.com. Tim Burton is looking to direct the sequel to his 1988 cult classic Beetlejuice with Michael Keaton back as well. This will be based around a script already being worked on by Seth Graham Smith, the writer of Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, and Burton's Dark Shadows. No word on what roles Helena Bonham Carter and Johnny Depp would be playing. Burton is still set to direct Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, which is really just a story of Burton's college years at CalArts. When we hear more news on the Beetlejuice story, we'll be sure to post it so everyone else can take it. The new trailer for the much-anticipated Anchorman 2 was released this week and had some actual, legitimate, funny moments, unlike the Ron Burgundy Dodge commercials currently clogging up your TV. The film is set for release on December 20th, so in the meantime, head on down to your local Dodge dealer and ask them how many parts were actually made in China. George Clooney's The Monuments Men looked like one of the more interesting winter movie releases, but this week came the news that the film's release was being pushed back to February 2014, where it will reside in the junk pile season alongside a bevy of Katherine Heigl romantic comedies, and I'm guessing a movie where a talking dog scores a winning goal for a hockey team coached by Jackie Chan. The reason is said to be that some of the film's visual effects could not be completed in time for a December release. Clooney himself said, "We simply don't have enough people to work enough hours to finish it. So if anyone knows an eighth grader with a pirated copy of Adobe After Effects, send him to George Clooney's house. Come on. My 90-year-old grandfather just added a pretty convincing explosion over iPhone footage of my grandmother picking tomatoes. And you can't find a visual effects guy? Was this movie made in World War II or about World War II? A decent visual effects guy just sold me coffee. He's free. Just let him clock out first." If ever released, it stars, among others, Clooney, Matt Damon, John Goodman, and Bill fucking Murray.
Yeah.
While speaking with Flicks in the City, William Fichtner shed some light on the tone and tenor of the upcoming Michael Bay-produced Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie. The actor, who will be playing the Shredder, said the Turtles, quote, "always had sort of a bouncy cartoon feel to me, which is great. That's why it was appealing. That's not this movie. It's not like any Mutant Ninja Turtles thing you've ever seen before," which is kind of like saying, "hey, you know that sex thing you like so much? How about we just try writing poems and crying?" Fichtner also revealed that he has signed on to appear in 3 Ninja Turtles movies before throwing an appliance at Michael Bay. While promoting Thor 2, Marvel Studio head Kevin Feige tried to make it very clear that James Spader's involvement in the Avengers Age of Ultron will go beyond just voice work, saying that they will be capturing his face and body to craft a whole performance, which is the same thing Soderbergh said about Gina Carano in Haywire. Feige went on to explain Ultron in the comics is a robot, but what's cool about him in the comics, and certainly how Joss Whedon is interpreting him for the movie, is that he is much more than just a robot, which all sounds about as convincing as the acting on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The Avengers Age of Ultron is set for a 2015 release and is not the movie about lightsabers and Ewoks. But speaking of that movie and news that broke today, J.J. Abrams and Lawrence Kasdan, the man who once begged George Lucas to kill off Han Solo, have taken over the writing of Star Wars Episode 7, and Michael Arndt's involvement with the project is said to be done. No word yet on whether this is a typical handoff of a big-budget script or whether or not Arndt was fired for submitting a draft or the opening crawl simply said those last three never happened. The void left by Charlie Hunnam dropping out of 50 Shades of Grey has been filled. Jamie Dornan has been cast as the man who will be filling Dakota Johnson's void. The actor currently appears on ABC's Once Upon a Time, the show that everyone from your high school drama department still watches. 50 Shades of Grey is still set for an August 2014 release, so check your local sexual predator watchdog websites for showtimes. And one of the more interesting castings in recent memory, Bane himself, Tom Hardy, has been cast as Elton John in the Rocket Pictures biopic titled Rocket Man. The film will follow the life of the former Reginald Dwight as he rises to fame and success as Elton John, but will also include fantastical elements from his songs. Warhorse writer Lee Hall has written the script. To prepare for the role, the normally buff and sculpted Hardy is going to eat like Schmozno News Jerk Ken Napsok at a Mexican restaurant, which means you just don't stop eating until the paramedics take away the fourth burrito. I'm Ken Napsok, and those are your Schmozno headlines brought to you by Magic Hat Brewing Company. For more news, be sure to head to Schmozno.com for reviews, news, and clues.
I mean, look, sometimes there are good performances, and sometimes there are step-back and bow performances, and Ken Napsok, that was one of them, man. That was great.
Kenny, that was like Jordan at the Garden.
You know what it was. Because we have a lovely new lady here sitting here. Anytime there's a lovely lady, you want to impress. Oh, I think you knocked it out of the park.
No, what? You don't know Ken Napsok.
I was up rehearsing till 2 in the morning.
That's what I think.
But not because of Kathy, because of me, because I'm his favorite laugher.
That's probably the reason.
See? Yeah, I mean, you're beautiful, don't get me wrong, but I think we all know who the talent in this room is.
Josh McCougan. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
So, all right, let's talk about some of these stories. Yeah. Let's get it ready. Let's start with this.
What do you feel like, Christian?
Elton John. Let's start with Elton John. Tom Hardy cast as Elton John. My thoughts on it are, you know, right now for me, stop mugging. You guys taking pictures. Who cares? He's going to be here all day taking pictures. I need you.
Mark's trying to pose.
He's posing.
He's talking about
Elton John. I'm a diva. I want him to get my good
side. All right, come on.
Mark has some angles written to his contract.
I know. No, that's me. All right. So the thing with Tom Hardy is that him and Fassbender are like my two favorites right now.
Yeah, Tom Hardy was your boy for a long time.
And I think that this is a role for him that I think that he is going to crush. I think that he is super talented in everything he does. I think that he will transform himself. And I think that it's also going away from that
tough guy attitude thing that, you know, you want to get away from that, and you're going to see that he has the skills. Kathy, how do you feel about Tom Hardy as Elton John?
I think it definitely will be a difference from what we've seen him in before. I mean, from Inception, right?
Yeah.
To
Bane, to Elton.
He was in This Is War, so right. I don't know. I guess, like, yeah, he does typically play the tough guy that, I don't know, sometimes he does have a softer side.
This is just a different role, not only for the softer side element.
Completely.
Because Elton John is just one of the most talented musicians of all time. Mark, how are you feeling about it?
Okay, here's how it's going to go down. You know this is a conspiracy when if he plays Elton John, then that same year Elton John sadly dies, and then Tom Hardy plays Candle in the Wind at the Oscars.
Oh, man.
He is winning a statue. That's why you do these kind of roles, man. You do impersonations of other people that are against your type. It's just like Jamie Foxx when he was playing Ray Charles. It's like you're going for an Oscar. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's showing off your acting ability. And when you look at Tom Hardy, and by the way, his name is Sir Elton John. When you look at them together, I can see a resemblance there.
All right,
I can see a resemblance, but can Tom Hardy sing, or are they going to have
interesting.
Well, if Elton John could sing a song like Saturday Night's All Right for Fightin', I think Tom Hardy can sing something like Daniel.
Well, we'll tune into it for sure, as we will tune in for this next movie we talk about every damn podcast, and that's Star Wars. J.J. Abrams basically coming on to him and Len Kasdan coming on to I'm trying to think now, what does it mean? Does it mean that they got the story to a place to where JJ now is like, okay, I like where we're set up here. Everybody seems to like this. Now I want to go and put my touch on it. I'm going to bring Kasdan in here. He's going to get that feel of 4, 5, and 6. Or does he go, we're in the wrong direction here. We just got to gut this thing. What are you thinking, Ellis?
I think that those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. And by that, I mean world history. Like, you look at dictators, right? They generally don't fare that well, whereas democracies, they can kind of handle it because there's a checks and balances, you know? And so I think JJ, I think he just got in there and he's like, look, I like what I'm doing right here, but I need somebody else's opinion that I trust. I need to run this by other people.
But what do you think about him jumping off of the, because Arndt wrote the script. Wrote this whole thing, and now JJ is going with Lawrence Kasdan doing. Do you think that because of his script? Did you think he liked Arndt's script or didn't like it?
I think he's nervous about the fan reaction, and I think that you need to spread it around a little bit to everybody who has who's had hands or will have hands in the Star Wars universe. Yeah. I think you want to know their opinion. It's like you're going to the Electoral College for votes because you can't talk to every Star Wars fan because they'll attack you. You want to
get a good consensus.
And Kasdan's great.
Yeah, like, of course. And he's royalty. Yeah. Kathy, how are you feeling? Are you a Star Wars fan in general? I know you like the Harry Potter movies, but
I like Star Wars. I'm not as into it as ever. Like, it I does. Feel like I need
Kathy?
A refresher.
Yeah. Kathy?
Okay, right. No, but I feel like...
Stay away from 1, 2, and 3. Just watch 4, 5, and 6.
No, I've seen them all. I just think that doing another movie is going in the wrong direction completely.
No!
Yeah.
No, why?
I'm worried about the next... couple movies. I just feel like
if you had your way, then it would just be done. It would just be, hey, we had a great run there, and then the prequels, and now let's just kill it.
I just feel like having more movies to this franchise, it's gonna devalue what has already been done.
It's very hard to devalue 1, 2, and 3. Those movies are so bad.
But then you have
you're already devalued.
I don't know. I just feel like...
I might agree with that if the prequels had never been made and we left off with Return of the Jedi and that great kegger on the Ewok village and that's the last thing we saw of Star Wars, I would have been okay with that, I think. But now that we had the prequels and we saw that, okay, they can bleed, they're mortal, now let's have as many adventures in this fucking universe as possible.
And we have such a rich universe, you're going to be able to do so much. I think your tune will change. Yeah. I understand the skepticism because you're
gonna
not...
I'm going to watch them.
Yeah, and we will definitely talk to you about them in 2018.
Josh is foaming at the mouth.
What do you got, Mikush?
I'll just say that I got the most tweets per minute I've ever got as soon as Kathy Kelly said that.
Like, Schmoville
literally... Moving the needle, girl.
You better close yourself in that house on the mount while Schmoville comes up with torches and pitchforks to take you out.
I mean, I'm just saying, there have been so many different things that they've gone on. They've gone on to do, like, Saturday morning cartoons and, like, just...
Droids.
Yeah, but wait. But that's...
Christmas special.
I know it's completely different.
Did you like the Star Trek movies, the recent ones? Not so much. Okay, so well, then I understand the skepticism. I don't agree with you, but I understand them. All right, let's go. Let's go now to this this Thor 2 thing with James Spader as with the body performance, and it kind of sounds like, it's going to kind of be like what Andy Serkis does with King Kong. But I don't think we need that with James Spader. Maybe because they're just playing off his popularity right now. I don't think we need the face and the body and all that stuff for him.
James Spader isn't quite the athlete that Andy Serkis is.
But from the catch, I understand that sometimes you want to have such a realistic portrayal and you want to still know that the actor's in there, so they want to make you know, hey, that's still James Spader. That's the guy from The Blacklist. Don't worry. And I don't want them to focus on that. I want the Ultron is Ultron. We don't need him to be James Spader. Do you agree, disagree?
I think you have to wait to see what the movie holds and who Ultron looks like. Nobody knows what – I don't know what Ultron looks like. I don't read the comics. So if that's the way that James Spader's going to look or if that's the way the character looks, then fine. But, I'm not upset. Who did you want? Did you want Tom Hardy's full lips?
No. I'm not saying that. I don't care who the actor is. I'm glad James Spader's doing it. I just don't want them to focus on trying to show you that there's an actual performer in there. Because I didn't need that for King Kong and for Andy Serkis and for Gollum. I just knew the character was there. It was cool that Andy was in there and made it cool that he was an actual actor, but the character came alive, and I just want Ultron to be Ultron. I don't want him to worry about looking and sounding like James Spader.
Yeah, I want it to look real. I want it to look realistic more than anything.
All right. So, Kathy, how are you feeling about this 50 Shades of Grey thing? Jamie
Have
Dornan.
Have you read that?
Who is this person?
Have you read the book?
Yeah, I borrowed them from Ken Napzok, and she was
like, is that true?
And then,
did my notes confuse you?
A lot of stuff in the margin.
Sort of highlighted lines. It was a lot easier to follow.
The picture bookmark might have been a bit too much, and I apologize.
I feel like Charlie Hunnam, they've had like this whole controversy over whether he should be in the role or not, and now he's not doing it. Jamie Dornan, I actually watch Once Upon a Time, and I really
like
him.
Oh, is that where he's from?
That.
Okay,
yeah.
He's like the cop in that. He fights fairy tales, right?
Is he sexy?
He was in season one. I think that's what, I mean, it's women reading this book.
Right.
That's why, that's going to be their audience for the movie. So I think that was where the backlash was coming from. Charlie Hunnam, good-looking guy.
He's not right for the role. Is this guy, Jamie Dornan, right for the role?
I think that
He looks right for the role.
Yes, he's a very good-looking guy.
I want to ask Kathy more about 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Do you read that book and stuff happens, or is it just like, eh?
I feel like the movie is going to have very little dialogue. So if that gives you any idea.
Ellis is still crushed that Emma Watson wasn't cast as that role.
There's so many
rumors about it.
I think he's good for the ladies. I think that they were going after Hunnam hard because... No pun intended, because he's the Sons of Anarchy guy and he's a Pacific Rim guy, so I think that could get guys to be like, fine, I'll take the girl to see it because the tough guy who rides a bike is in it. I don't think as many guys are going to be like, yeah, the guy that, you know, fought the Hansel and Gretel is going to be in there. I don't think it's as exciting,
Here's some tweets from Schmobile here. At the one proto writes in, my girlfriend said this new guy looks exactly like what the guy looks like in the book. She's reread the series 4 times now. By the way, guys, the news stories that we're talking about, tweet in at Schmozno, post on our Facebook wall, facebook.com/Schmozno. By the way, thank you guys. We just reached over 10,000 likes on Facebook. Thank you to Schmobile on that.
Oh, sweet. What do we get?
You don't get anything because I don't think you've ever been on there in like the last 2 or 3 months.
It's MySpace, right? MySpace.com?
Yeah, Friendster. So there you go. Just keep tweeting in. We have one more story we're going to talk about here, and that would be the Beetlejuice story that, yes, we broke last week. We were going to break it. Actually, if you go back and listen to our show. That night, I was ready. Riley almost threw me off the chair, and like I was literally about. I was sitting here in the V.
Really?
We were about to talk about the story, and I was like, "Yeah, we got another one." And I was about to talk about the Tim Burton thing that night, and Riley goes, "No! We're gonna put it on the site tomorrow." And we put it on the site.
Yeah.
And it blew up, and we, you know, for the most part, we got the credit for it. And for the most part, and basically what it is that there. Tim Burton is said to be interested in directing Beetlejuice 2, and it's also rumored that Michael Keaton will be coming back as well. Now, the only thing that scares me with this is the fact that the Vampire Hunter and Dark Shadows writer is on it, because both those movies, to me, I didn't like at all. And I don't know if Tim Burton has had the magic in quite a long time. That does not mean I don't want to see it. Mm-hmm. I am very excited to see Michael Keaton put on the gear and run around and do, and you know, grab his nuts and go honk honk again. That'd be great.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
but how about you guys? How are you feeling about it, Ellis?
I'll take the risk, you know. I mean, I'll put my chips on the table because I love Beetlejuice. I think Beetlejuice is a classic film, not only with the cool, weird, spooky stuff that Tim Burton's good at, but it's just hilarious from start to finish, and there's something new in there every time. I don't know that you can recapture that, but
that's gonna be tough.
I'm just such
different
a Michael...
time period, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. And like Michael Keaton would be like the grandfather kind of ghost. Is his head still shrunk? Is his head shrunk at the end of the spoiler alert? His head is tiny at the end of the first one, so I don't know how he gets out of that, but I'd like to see it.
Kathy, were you an original fan of Beetlejuice?
Yeah, this was like a staple of my childhood. Okay. So I'm excited for this. Cool, I feel like it'll introduce Beetlejuice to a whole new generation. But yeah, like, is it going to pick up from where it left off, or is this, what, 20 years down the line?
Yeah,
15
well,
years down
you know what's interesting, though, is that what Beetlejuice, the only thing that where Beetlejuice kind of fails, because it came out in 1988, is that the special effects weren't up to par with what they are now. So with Tim Burton, who does have a very vivid imagination, if he can conjure up some cool-looking stuff, he has the technology to be able to implement whatever he wants. Now, sometimes that gets dangerous when it's in the hands of, like, a Jorge Lucas, but sometimes it's really good when the right director, like Guillermo del Toro, can use it. So I'd be really interested to see it. You got my money.
All right, Shmuel. But those are the stories tonight. Thank you to Ken Napsok for the news.
Yeah, buddy.
It was really great.
You're welcome.
He's still glowing. Look at him. He's got that look like he just won the three-point contest.
About 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah,
I'd like my book back. It's been a lonely summer, Kathy.
Now, guys, so what we're going to do, again, if you check out news every day, we're posting stuff on schmozno.com. If you're new to our podcast, if you're new to us in general, go to schmozno.com. Check it out. Also, our YouTube channel, youtube.com/schmozno. Stuff like that on there all the time. We post parts of the show on there as well. Now, what I want to talk about is the podcast contest, the review contest. We are so excited here. We are going to announce the winner. Who won? There were so many great ones out there, and we're going to let you guys know who won. There were so many good ones. You can go to the playlist, check them out. We are ready to announce our winner, Johnny. So if you are... No, you're not ready to announce it? Okay.
Johnny, what's going on with the fantasy football? When that drive's done, how about you cue up some music?
Okay, so we're not ready. We'll announce it in a second, but you guys, you're going to be... What happened? Johnny's had
I called out Johnny because he's really following... This is the problem with Thursday night NFL.
No. All right, here we go, guys. So we're going to announce... No, this is absolute, that's not right.
Was that One Way to Rock by Sammy Hagar?
I guess I have.
I think I was beginning One Way to Rock.
I gotta do the engineer
drum roll,
job.
What are you
doing? Oh my god!
Hold on.
Can the intern replace Johnny the engineer?
Ellis, take over while I do this.
So Kathy, let's talk about 50 Shades of Grey.
Okay.
So you read it. What's the book about?
Ken needs to get back on the mic too.
Yeah.
Right here for you.
Speaking of 50 Shades of Grey, that suit is at least 5 or 6 shades of gray. Yeah. That thing is fantastic. Right. So what's the book about? Is it just this guy that goes around hooking up with a bunch of different chicks? He's a gigolo.
He hooks up with one girl.
Opens her life up sexually, Mark Ellis.
He's a monogamous, and then
sadomasochistic acts.
Oh, but he just it's just two people, but they do 50 different crazy sexual acts.
It's just two people getting to know
each
other.
He's a rich dude that's bored. That's basically what it is.
Okay,
all right, we're right. We're sorry. I didn't mean to cut
you
off.
Oh, you can't. Oh,
we'll talk.
All right.
The IRS is breathing down my neck like it's
our
some
winner.
Kind of personal vendetta against Bobby Finstock.
Oh. The winner.
Bobby Finstock. No. Bobby Finstock. No. It's Bobby Finstock. No.
Uh-oh. Oh, my God. He's injured.
The IRS is breathing down my neck.
There he is.
Bobby Finstock. No.
Wait a minute. Look at this guy.
Like it's some kind of personal vendetta.
Wow.
You know, make sure you talk loud when you get in here. Now, this is, look who it is.
Is this on valet?
Look who it is.
Nice dragon tattoo that lets you have your LARPing group.
Tiffany.
That's not Tiffany. That's because she's not writhing in anger right now.
Schmovel's losing their minds by the way. He's not the winner of the show. He just popped in.
I was going to say, did he even do a review?
What? No, he did not do a review. He is not the winner. Don't worry. Everyone's like, that's not right. He's not the winner. He's here.
50 Shades of Grey. Somebody's beard has had an orgasm over there.
Finstock, yes.
Thanks, Josh.
You had something to say? You didn't do your...
Yeah, I haven't been here in a while.
You didn't
really...
do your trademark. You're rattled. There was no trademark. There was nothing. Wow.
You know, I've been switching. I hurt my leg, so it got a little different.
Oh, what, your whole... Your
I'm,
whole...
I'm as happy as Richard Chamberlain at a...
Wow, you're rattled tonight.
All-male swimming event.
Wow, well, you're okay.
Who knew the key to Finstock's win was in his Achilles tendon?
I'll tell you where Finstock showed up.
Well, me and Kobe had it.
And, well, listen, Finstock, I'll tell you where he's been a big star, is on Schmo Plus.
Oh, he runs that network.
Go to Meet the Schmoes and watch JTI's episode. Oh, my God, he runs that thing. But, Kathy, have you ever met Finstock?
Yeah, I met him. I want to say it was the first time I was on the podcast.
Okay.
The
right. And then at Maria's party.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you guys know each other. Okay.
Yeah. We had a fun time. I retweeted something you did the other day.
Oh, yeah? What? what was it? What did you retweet?
It was just her standing in a blue dress.
Oh, that was it? And you liked that?
Yeah, there was not much fabric to that.
Zero.
That's
All right, Bobby. All right, Bobby.
Well, I got this. Actually, this is the same exact vest that Stallone wore in Rhinestone.
No.
Like the actual one or the replica?
That's absolutely not true.
It's not.
Okay.
But I did get it from Wesley Snipes' tax evasion.
That's absolutely not true. Where'd you get it?
I found it on the street.
Okay. All right. So, Finstock, why are you here? Because normally you show up, you have some stories for us tonight. Are we going to – What is that?
What are those?
It's a Gucci dust bag.
It's a Gucci.
First of all.
What is it for real?
Are there magic beans in there?
There's something in here who I want to give to somebody who
Kathy,
I think is becoming, my Martin Scorsese to – Robert De Niro.
Oh,
okay. I got a guess.
I got a guess too.
Yeah, right, is it that cute little guy?
It would be
right
JTI.
There?
Yeah.
Oh, JTI, get your mug in there, and not my chair.
I want him to get him to a microphone, and I'm going to give him what it is.
All right, you got to give him the microphone.
Yeah.
All right, so
come on around here, JTI.
Around here. What is
and
going on?
Get
right
that sexy voice
it
on.
Scares
this.
Me.
Now, why are you giving anything to JTI? Yeah. What has he done for you,
JTI? How much do you love Finstock?
He is my muse.
He's your muse. Okay, all right. JTI,
he's a gem to work with.
We let you on the show whenever you want to come by. What has JTI done that he deserves gifts before us?
He's my yin to my yang.
Okay, so why?
He's my Terry Garr to Dustin Hoffman.
Okay, well, what are you going to give him?
Did you want him 50 Shades of Grey?
What are you going to give him?
I'm going to give him this.
Uh-oh, what is this?
I'm
not giving you the bag.
Is there a head?
The dust bag needs to come back this way.
Is there a head in there? What's in there? What is going on?
It might be a tiny severed head.
What is it? Wow.
Stallone
look at
mug.
Oh, my god!
Finstock Imo Stallone mug.
That's the Stallone mug.
No, it's not the one, no.
It's not. That's blue tank top Stallone.
That's the undrinkable out of.
That's tobacco.
But I'll tell you what, that is, that's like, you guys are like blood brothers now.
I thought that's what you meant by get your mug in the shot, was you knew that it was a mug.
Oh, I didn't know that. Now put your mug in the shot.
I feel like Indiana Jones and Holy Grail.
Yeah.
He's like, got the... What was that cup he got at the end?
Hey, you're flustered. You're all red now?
I'm flustered. I'm so excited.
This will not heal a gunshot wound.
How about you say thank you?
Thank you.
In grade?
No problem. I was gonna give him a 1982 Soldier of Fortune magazine with Rambo on the cover, but the articles were just too good. I'm sorry.
Hey, Christian, I have a new bylaw. Yeah. I think anytime somebody gives somebody else a gift on the podcast that doesn't involve one of us, do it off air.
Right.
How about that? If I'm not getting shit, I don't want it on my
it's
podcast.
True. I don't even...
You're next.
Well, listen, so give me, because you just ruined, you were going to give two stories now because of that fiasco. You're only getting one. What story do you want to give?
There's a little known fact about David Copperfield.
All right, wait a minute before you do this so I can fill in, Kathy, what's going on here. Finstock tells stories that sound outrageous. Most of the time, the stuff inside of them are garbage.
Okay.
But sometimes he tells some stuff that's true. So we, Schmoville and us, are going to decide whether or not it's true or false. Finstock, go ahead.
You piqued my interest. I have some friends that went to see Copperfield perform magic in Vegas not too long
ago. This is an interesting one. My dad, who used to work in the textile district in the 1960s, right?
Okay.
Selling women's clothing. Had a run-in with a little Chinese boy, okay, named Charlie.
Okay.
He tried to steal a couple of buttons from his out of the, you know, the back of his trunk all-cash business.
Yeah, Charlie the button thief.
Right. Guess what?
we all read that tale. Yeah,
that turned out, once Copperfield started knowing what he was doing with his magic, Copperfield was Charlie, the little Asian boy.
Wait, what?
I am going to say – I'm going to say true. Wait. David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear. He flew.
Wait, so he turned himself into an Asian kid? What happened?
Not that hard. If you really practice, it's not that hard.
He started
I'm sure
off,
he could, but why would he?
He started
to steal
off.
Buttons.
All right, so Kathy,
no, he
you're
started
say,
off as a little Asian boy. And now he's who he is. Now you know whom who he is today.
Michael Jackson started off as a little black boy. It can happen.
Voila.
Kathy's. No, wait a minute. So at Schmoes, no, was that tale that Finstock just told absolutely ludicrous or true? Kathy is saying ludicrous. I am saying ludicrous.
I thought Kathy said true.
No. I'm saying why would he is not. Yeah.
I'm going to go true.
Okay.
It's not like I lose anything.
All right, he made an elephant disappear. He made the whole country of Africa disappear one time.
Yeah. Right, so everyone's saying Schmoville across the board is saying bullshit, absurd, ludicrous, fake.
I'm riding you, Finstock. Don't let me down.
Okay. So Finstock, what is the truth in this story? Be honest.
The truth is that my dad did do that.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
All cash business out of the thing. Oh, Copperfield
has
slept
never met your
with
dad.
A little Asian boy.
That's not true. Michael Jackson, maybe.
This is the part where you have to tell all the truth.
All right, Copperfield does own an island.
Okay.
And he brings girls there on his private jet.
Okay.
And he holds them against their will.
Okay. Now I need the truth. I need everything that's true.
That's the truth.
Okay, that's the truth.
That's absolutely the truth.
But he didn't turn himself into a little Asian boy.
No, he didn't.
Okay.
Not
in chains and then saw them in half, too.
Well, I just quit my part-time job at Pleasure Chest. I was washing the back boots.
Is that how you hurt your Achilles?
Well, that's how I did that. No, I was rearranging the Swinger magazine section. That's how that happened.
All right, listen, my God. Bobby Finstock, it is always great having you here. I'm sure you're going to hang out with us tonight, do some backstage Schmo Plus videos that we can put up there. Now I want to I want to talk to the actual winner of the podcast contest, and we are going to he's actually in studio tonight.
He's the one who filmed the thing for us.
So what is he's a local?
He is a local.
Wow. Is he a little Asian boy?
I don't even know where he is. Is he right here? Okay, look. So can we play the music?
I heard. Is it true that you do a new baking show?
Get out of here.
Let's bring in the winner of the Schmozo podcast contest. We call him Copster because of his YouTube channel, Copster Reviews. He has a great first name, Christian.
Oh, God.
Great name. Throw on your headphones, brother.
Wow.
Nice to have you, dude.
Surreal. Surreal.
It is great to have you here. So I wanted to tell, first of all, to everyone that submitted the reviews, you guys did a fantastic, fantastic job. Mark and I, we talked about it and everything, too. And Christian, pronounce your last name for me, please.
Rubalcaba.
Okay.
Yeah. See, that's going to be too hard.
No, we're just going to call him Copster. We'll call him Copster.
Copster?
Because he has a YouTube channel called Copster Reviews.
Oh, you're the guy.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. When I'm on the road, I watch the actual podcast for 2 hours when I'm back in my hotel room. Then when I'm really hammered, that's when I watch the reviews. So sometimes the faces kind of meld together.
Yeah.
But you're a very good-looking young lad, congratulations on the victory.
Now, what's great about Copster is that he's a diehard fan of the show. How long have you been watching the show for?
I want to say a little bit over a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you remember what one of your first shows that you watched for? What's one of your favorite shows that you've
Who's your favorite schmo? Let's just get into it. Yeah.
All right. Favorite schmo.
He looked right at Kathy. He's like, can I say her?
I had one of her cookies, and that kind of won me over.
Smart kid. See? Political answer.
Did you bring cookies?
Political answer. Look at how intimidating is this? You got Makuga and Ken Knapp's staring at this poor guy.
You have a paparazzi too.
I know.
Get a picture of the 85 Bears back here that he's got to look at.
Poor guy. So,
he's trying to make sense of
really
air, boys.
All right, let's go with one of your favorite shows that you've listened to in the past or a favorite moment.
Oh man. JTI getting slapped. I hope nothing like that, could ever
happen to anyone else.
Trust me, with the other Christian lurking around, anything's possible.
Well, that was of course with Roddy Piper. But again, what Copster did was he analyzed the shows and he went over the moments and stuff that he liked, and he just took it from a fan's perspective, and everybody else did as well too. There was just an energy that you had about you and your movie reviews. You do the same thing as well, and it was cool to see. Like week in and week out, you put them out and your reviews did pretty good on your channel?
Yeah. They did.
Okay, good. So,
nice. Making you some views, huh? All right. Well, you can just pay us back whenever.
So what Christian here, Copster's going to wind up winning, what he's going to do is that he's going to be able to come back on the show, and we're going to give him a segment. He's going to do like a
news segment. He should do the news.
A news segment. He's going to do a trivia. It's going to be a trivia contest for all of us. It's going to be a trivia contest. He's going to have all of great moments throughout the history of the show, and he's going to quiz us on it. And so we're all going to see. So he's going to do that. But here's something that I found out. JTI told me, because JTI shot a video with Copster on when they did Meet the Schmoes, and he helped film it. Copster told him that he was interested in being our intern.
He told the intern that he's interested in being an intern.
Dude, true?
You talk about starting at the ground floor. that's like in the Temple of Doom.
Right. I mean, the opportunity was there, so I might as well.
Yeah, yeah, okay. All right.
Hey, might as well jump.
Yeah. Well, so you would be interested in being – look, the good news is you can only be better than JTI.
Oh, I got it then.
Okay, yeah. Good. So you want to be an intern on the show from now on?
Yeah, I mean, that would be great. That would be like playing with my favorite baseball team.
Wow.
Like, right then and there.
Okay. Let's save that one. Everybody take a breath here, okay? There's some prerequisites, kid. Do you have a bar of soap?
Yes.
You can be zestfully clean once in a while.
Yes, I can.
Okay, and you have a camera. Mm-hmm. Okay, do you know how to use it?
Better than JTI.
JTI doesn't film anything.
No, look, we're very classy here. Can somebody, Josh or Ken, can you get JTI a bus pass? Or, like, I think they sell them at Ralph's.
Yeah.
Just go, thanks for hanging, kid. See you later.
Poor JTI. Getting crushed. No, look.
He's also got to go through the physical.
Oh, I went to an all-boys school, so I went through that before.
Kid's quick, Ken. You like, he's quick.
Quick wit.
So, JTI, by the way, as much as we bust his balls, and that's something you should know as well, we love JTI. He's been on the show for a very long time, over a year.
There's my guy.
We do. JTI's been loyal, but this is Makuga. Do we give the kid a shot or what?
Makuga looks nervous.
Makuga looks like
we'll give him a month.
You give him a month. That's all he gets.
Is
a month.
A tryout.
Kathy. That's what we call it here in Smelma. That's a tryout.
All right.
You call it dating.
Okay. So.
Don't you love how as soon as they get threatened with another guy, Makuga and Ken turn on their A games like that?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. All right. So, Copster, welcome to the team, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Your reviews are fantastic.
Thank you.
Make sure you check out his YouTube channel as well, Copster Reviews. And we will see more of him. You're going to see a lot of him on Schmo Plus because that is where the interns are going to live. They're going to shoot their videos. They're going to shoot a lot of stuff. We actually gave Copster the flip cam tonight. He's going to tape a bunch of stuff. He'll get interviews during the breaks, throughout the show. He's going to get good stuff. So, again, my friend, welcome to the team. We look forward to having you and look forward to seeing what you can do for the Schmo. The Schmo. That works.
All right. Copster, that's exciting. Get to know baby carrots. They're your best friend.
Yeah,
okay?
That's true. And then we'll do your segment pretty soon.
Yep.
So, maybe within the next couple
of
weeks.
Thanks to everybody who made those video reviews. Those were great. Yeah. And especially, like, Georgie McCann would have those out before the damn podcast.
Georgie, that guy is amazing. I love him so much.
Yeah.
Georgie.
Twitter all the time.
Oh, he is a...
Hear that, Georgie? And she can cook.
Yeah, Georgie's a Schmoville favorite. There are so many great, great Schmoville fans out there. Darcy put some stuff out there that's great. I mean, again, and if I didn't mention tonight, I apologize. You're all in the playlist because you were so great. And thank you so much for doing that. And we'll do another contest like this. But our reigning champion is sitting with us, Copster. Thank you so much. And just a second here, we're gonna bring in Ben Bagley, and is Ben here? Okay, yeah. So we're gonna bring Copster.
Bring him in, JTI.
Now,
Jesus,
this is your first time. This is gonna happen. It won't be your last. Get out of there.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
All right. So now
let's get a professional with the mic.
That's right.
You know, let's get a guy that knows what he's doing.
Bringing in to the mic now. Finally, get him to the show. We talked to him at Comic-Con. We finally get him in Schmoville. Comedian Ben Bagley is here. What's up, Ben?
Hey, everybody.
Ben, hey.
Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you.
Ben Bagley, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Ben and I, we're good buddies because we see each other around the comedy clubs a lot. I see Ben on TV. He does a lot of commercials and stuff like that. And we run into each other at Comic-Con. Every time there's a con of any sort, we're walking by each other. I'm like, that's Ben Bagley. That's Mark Ellis. And then we have a nice embrace. And then we go about.
It is an embrace. It's more than a hug. It lingers longer than a hug.
Like 4 seconds, and you go, okay, we're good.
Yeah, I'm usually the one holding on.
They never want to let go.
Yeah.
Why would you?
It's usually Ben saying, okay, I got stuff to do.
Copster, that's what you got to get on tape during the break. Make sure you get that hug. okay, so Ben is here tonight. We're going to be talking to some TV news during this half an hour. And what better way to do that than everybody's favorite TV segment on the Schmoes No Show, our resident wild man. The wild man, where's that dance? Wild man, Josh.
Here we go. That is a wild dance.
That is a wild dance, and Derek Huff saw that dance before.
I haven't seen that dance in way too long.
That's the first time I've ever seen that dance.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming to the mic right now, the wild man, Josh Makuga.
Thank you, Christian. Thank you, Mark. Kathy, you and I. Ready? Shove it, Ken. All right. How's everybody doing tonight? Doing good.
Just do the news, kid. Just do the news. crowd work tonight, John.
All right, let's start off with everybody's favorite show right now, Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Everybody
yeah.
feeling about that?
I'm digging it, man. I'm digging this season. I like that there's a lot more zombie killing in this and a lot less really boring, sad talking and holding heads close together like the Shane and Rick stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Season two.
Do you, I mean, I can put this on the floor for whoever, but who is feeding the zombies?
Oh, look, let's, well, here's the thing that's true. I want to tell, before we do that, we got to tell Schmogel if they're not caught up. Oh, okay. This is spoiler stuff.
Gotcha.
So if you're not caught up right now?
It's fine.
All right. Look, as far as, I think for me, who is feeding it?
Don't say both of your. You got to pick one, then I'll pick the other one.
Fine.
You go.
I think that it is the new alcoholic doctor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I want to go with old eye patch, but I think it's just a little too easy.
How did he get in there?
I think it's one of those stupid girls. One of those girls that I just remember the girls and their dad bit it, you know.
Too easy.
And they weren't woman enough to cut their dad's heart out or whatever you do to kill a guy.
But that's like a little too anticlimactic, don't you think?
That'd be weird. Because how do they punish them then? It's like, you found it. Like, they can't kill two little girls or that show will be like,
who knows? Carol might be. Carol has turned dark.
Carol's dark this season. It's great. She's
Carol's
getting hotter.
I was
going to
say,
right?
She is getting sexy.
It's Jamie just Lee Curtis, man.
Yeah.
Little Jamie Lee Curtis, True Lies. Activia, that's even better. No, shit yourself all day with Activia.
But going to your question as far as what I think of this season so far, I mean, we're two episodes in, and we had Norman Reedus on last week, and he promised that it would get better and better and better. And I agree, and I believe him because I didn't love the first episode. I thought that it was really kind of it was just the same old stuff. It felt like a filler episode that maybe you should see in the middle of the season. This episode felt there was more at stake, and they gave you that setup, and now it's boom.
Well, yeah, because I think you needed that exposition.
Yeah,
you needed.
Yeah, because they're introducing like 40 new characters this season. It's like, we're going to kill a whole lot of people.
And right.
That's the same thing. The first episode of the second season was almost like a pilot episode for anything else because you're coming back months later and
you have 16 million people watching the show. And so you got to introduce them to everybody. But boys and girl, let's not forget that this show isn't the best at knocking the climaxes out of the park.
Right.
So if it's somebody.
Last season finale?
Yeah. Oh, so if it is somebody insignificant that's feeding them the mice, it's not going to shock me because this show is great at teasing you. Right. It's not great at the payoff.
That Breaking Bad kind of setup to where you're like, oh, that's how they did that. Was so clever. It's like, what?
This show will take you under the bleachers and make out with you, and then when it's time for the pants to come off, it goes home.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news here, and Schmoville can interrupt on its own.
Yeah,
but
you do it.
What'd you do?
What don't you do it?
What?
Ben Begley has never watched Breaking Bad.
Oh my God.
Keep drinking that beer, Ben.
Okay, in my defense, I came late to the game. I saw the pilot. I loved it, but I watched like 12 shows every single cycle.
But you don't refuse to watch.
No, it's just I haven't had time. I can't wait to watch
it. Listen, you don't know what happens, though, do you?
But don't you kind of want to be the guy, like, I wish I was his friend, like, oh, we should watch Breaking Bad together. I'm like, I didn't see it, but I actually saw it, and I can't wait to just see his reaction to each episode.
But, Makuga, you forget.
That's
creepy.
Remember,
I prefer it's a girl.
Makuga just wants an excuse to stare at me for hours.
Yeah, you're just sitting on the couch and not watching the TV. Just sitting, staring.
Ben, before you watch
the
scene,
Brown's got to do something.
Ben, before you watch the scene, just eat this orange. Just want to watch you.
I'm eating an orange.
All right. Look. The thing is, in his defense, you forget that Mark and I were very late to the game.
Yeah.
We started watching at the beginning of season five. Like, we watched the whole thing. We watched 1-4 and blew through it. But you're gonna watch it in like 2 weeks once you, once you finish.
Now, but you haven't seen a lick of the show. Has anything been spoiled for you?
No.
Do you know the ending?
No.
Here's how it goes down.
All right, Makuga,
I've been avoiding all that.
What's next? Let's
keep in that vein.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you were watching any of the baseball playoffs, you got inundated with Mob City. Is anybody?
Did it premiere? Right?
No. It premieres after the baseball playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Listen, I'm gonna watch it simply because it's Frank Darabont and it's the dude from Walking Dead.
Shane,
it's Shane from Walking Dead. But we've been over this before. We've seen three movies that were all okay, right? We saw the Gangster Squad, LA Confidential.
Say hi to Santa Claus.
It's the same people. Mickey Cohen, it's the same thing. It's just longer.
But here's – okay, let me – first, that excites me because those other ones that you – I mean – L.A. Confidential doesn't count because that's a great movie. It's, and that was a long time ago. But as far as,
but it's in the same.
That's okay. But that was Chinatown. that was in like the late '90s.
17 years ago, Makuga, get over it.
God damn it.
But in regards to the L.A. Gangster Squad.
That wasn't a good movie.
No, it wasn't. That didn't have Frank Darabont attached to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Walking Dead was so fantastic, and it's good now, but it was fantastic in those first six episodes because it was deeper because of what Frank Darabont brought to it, what he does in general.
Yeah.
So I am excited for this because of his involvement. Will I stick around after three or four episodes?
What?
I don't know.
That's the thing,
it's
though.
It's a super miniseries, so it's only three episodes.
Until you said Gangster Squad,
I thought that it was about Black Friday. Mob City, everyone's swarming.
It's three
like
episodes of a Walmart and people just getting attacked.
Trampled.
Slashing prices.
That's literally what I thought it was.
Is this more of what they did with Sherlock? Like, it's three episodes, like hour and a half episodes.
It's like
each.
A miniseries.
Yeah, but then
TNT can't afford a period drama like that for longer than three episodes.
So what if it does fantastic? It's over. It's done. There's going to be a clear cut ending to this.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you might have another Mob City come back like next fall or whatever.
Different
you know,
city.
If it does well, different city,
Mob
different
City
mob.
Vegas.
Yeah. And then eventually
just do CSI spinoffs of everything. Right.
I didn't like Gangster
Mob
Squad.
City, boys.
I feel like the L.A. gang squads, the L.A. gang scene, like fighting with the cops, just never did it for me. Like, it wasn't, it just like, it isn't that intriguing to me.
Even L.A. Confidential wasn't?
You don't like the Tommy gun?
I love the Tommy gun, but it was better served by New York gangsters lighting dudes up than L.A. wannabes. Gangsters in L.A. were wannabes.
No, that's bullshit. That's
they all came from Chicago and New York.
Yeah, because they couldn't hack it in the big city.
Are we talking about Bugsy Siegel or Mobster? This is the same conversation.
Bugsy Siegel came out here to rape everybody and build Vegas.
20 dwarves took turns doing handstands on the carpet from Bugsy. The best Warren Beatty performance ever.
What?
Yeah, exactly.
Did that happen? I need to see this movie.
Are you talking about Willy Wonka the Chocolate Factory?
Yes, it's a quote from Bugsy. He's one of the greatest gangsters of all time.
That's a great movie, but it's more Warren Beatty's performance and the building of Vegas.
I think I'll give Mob City a shot.
All right. What do you got? What's next?
Okay, this is the funniest one. Schmoville sent this to me, and I had no idea. Murder, She Wrote is being rebooted, starring Octavia Spencer.
Is it on the OWN network?
Yes!
Oh, no. CBS.
CBS. Oh, it's CBS.
No, sorry, you know, NBC. NBC okay. took
if
it.
If
it
was... Is there going to be a laugh track behind it,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, right? And her quote was like, I've always wanted to be a cross between Murder, She Wrote and Columbo, and that's what they're helping me do. And I was like, wait a second.
Who sets out for
Octavia
that goal?
Octavia Spencer. That was her goal.
Ben, how do you feel about this?
Oh, man, I hate seeing Academy Award-winning or nominated actors go to network television in really formulaic, terrible shows.
And that nailed it right there.
A reboot of something that no one wants that's under the age of 70 sounds really uninteresting.
And I don't think anybody's...
Yeah. Who reboots TV? That never happens.
Who's ever watched an episode?
Charlie's Angels worked so well.
And, oh my God, right. And Bionic Woman, I guess, too. But I mean, but again, it doesn't work.
It always fails.
It always fails.
If I could make a point, though, and I think I can because my name's on the marquee, Octavia Spencer is just one of these rare talents that has so much personality and so much charm that I think that if she's attached to a project, it could elevate. It's not like she's going to be doing an Angela Lansbury impression. She can make this her own. She can jazz it up.
What about Maria Bello in Prime Suspect that lasted like three episodes? Right. And Maria Bello's amazing. Yeah, too.
Here's the problem.
She's
not
the physical comedian that Octavia Spencer is. You know,
is that what the role calls for? It's not like Gallagher. She's like, it's got the killer watermelon.
It's a little dramedy, right? There's some drama. No, it's like Harry's Law.
The problem with this, though, too, is the fact that it's the same discussion you and I have had 100 times, is that also, not only the remake, network television.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's nothing in a drama like this, there's nothing risky. Even when Murder, She Wrote came out back in 87 or whatever it was, 85, you can still be a little, that's kind of edgy with an old lady doing all these murders and stuff. It's not edgy anymore. It doesn't work unless it was on like AMC or HBO or something like that. You'd be like, that could be a little interesting.
And not to mention that network television drags it out over 24 to 26 episodes. And no matter how good the writers are, those storylines after 3 to 8 seasons of that just get... I mean, look at the cougar in 24 season 2, the cougar trap. I don't know if you guys remember.
Right.
With Kim Bauer.
Yep.
Right. Which we'll get to Homeland.
This leads me to a really fun game, and it takes 3 seconds to play. Every one of you guys has to say yes or no on the by three, okay?
Okay.
Angela Lansbury, Alive or dead? Go.
Alive.
Yes. Yes. Alive.
Okay, we got Kathy. Yeah.
That's too many seconds. Dead.
Okay.
Ooh, I like that answer? You said yes or no and then asked alive or dead. And I was confused what yes or no meant.
Yeah, she's alive. I know she's
is she alive?
Yeah.
She's you know alive. She's alive?
Yeah, I know she's alive. I had lunch with her last week. But,
at Wood Ranch.
Did Finstock's old man sell her buttons?
Last week?
It's true. She could be dead. It's true. No, you know, the other thing, by the way, I want to make sure that a good point was made by Sandy Ramirez with a great Twitter, at Photonuts, who writes in, the Battlestar reboot seemed to work fine. It did. It was great. Mm. However,
it wasn't on network TV.
It wasn't on network TV. Yes. Okay.
Speaking of network TV, and most of Schmoville is up in arms because, I mean, you know, we have a lot of comic book movies and a lot of, you know, Avengers fans in the house.
Well,
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Sucks. Yeah.
Of the film. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is bombing. It's doing, it's not doing. Yeah. Kathy, who knows television? Go ahead, Kathy.
No, I was just going
to
say, I haven't watched, I watched the pilot, but I heard that this last episode was actually much, much better.
See, I'm so forgiving and such a nerd that every episode I've been like, yeah!
Really?
Yeah! It's okay. Yeah! I've been cheering them on. The second one was looked like sets made out of plastic when they were in the temples.
You just want to
root for it. It's so cheesy, though.
Here's my thing. I saw the pilot, and I was on Team Avengers because I'm like, let's give it some time to marinate and see if it gets good. However, just seeing the commercials for the second episode, I was like, I don't need to TiVo this.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm on
upset.
I'm on the team. Now I'm on the team where if it runs its course and you come back and you say, Ellis, you got to see it. It gets really good. Then I'll sit down and watch them all together. But I'm not stringing my emotions out week to week to week with this show anymore.
I think it's bad when Arrow's the best comic book series on TV.
Yeah. That's a cool show.
And it's gotten a lot better, actually.
And Ben is upset about it.
It was really bad, and then it got...
I'm upset because it's kind of true. I just want Agents... I haven't seen the last two episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but I watched the first three, and I did start enjoying it. They do kind of have very anticlimactic endings.
Yeah.
But the third episode was pretty awesome when they're like walking on the ceiling and gravity is getting there.
Nobody watched it.
I'm talking to a room of blank stares. Like, you are an
I'm
Uber
enjoying nerd. Some Ben Begley.
But had you talked to everybody after the first episode, everybody watched it. Because everybody was excited for it. And the problem was, it just became, for me, it became a show that should have been on after Smallville. The way that it was shot, it didn't seem like a show.
I wish there was more of a through line and less of a freak of the week. I wish the extremist storyline took the whole season where they're tracking down the doctor and all these other things.
And less jokes, though, too. Some jokes are fine. I don't mind jokes, but everything else is like, Agent Coulson's doing a fucking one-man show throughout the whole thing. And it's like,
I'd watch Agent Coulson read I don't know.
He's great, but don't you want to see him have an arc? Yeah.
I mean, you know what's odd is I was watching the Captain America 2, the Winter Soldier trailer today, and because they referenced S.H.I.E.L.D. a number of times in the trailer, and now when I think S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm like, it's that TV show that I'm not thinking S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to before the TV show, it was like, S.H.I.E.L.D.! That's the Avengers! Now it's like, that's that show on Tuesdays that I watch.
One of Schmoville's better Twitters asked me, he's like, do you think S.H.I.E.L.D. would have been more successful had they had a major superhero in it or a bigger name superhero in it? And I thought to myself, yeah, that kind of makes sense. I mean, yeah, they have Agent Coulson. He's kind of like the biggest name from it. But I think had they marketed it with like the superheroes' names, because all it is Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. We don't know what their names are. We don't know
who they are.
All it is, to me, it's just like we got the hottest actors we
could
find.
That's it. I don't think you could have gotten all really good agents. You could have called it Agents S.H.I.E.L.D. as you did, and make it like real characters, not like you said, like models in a magazine. And I would have people connect to them more, and there's more stuff to them. Again, using Breaking Bad as an example, I know it's a totally different genre of show, but they're not all these super good-looking people. They're real people. So
I
know we're in a different world.
That's network TV. Network TV. Everybody's beautiful on network TV.
But when are they going to learn? That's the thing. When are they going to learn?
And
when
it
are
has to
switch
be,
it off?
And the way it's shot, too. Like, it is network shot. Like, you can tell.
It's a TV show. You know it's a TV show.
Mark thinks is ugly, though.
I was going to say that you guys are forgetting about a network show called Murder, She Wrote, starring Octavia Spencer.
Well, don't forget about
Kathy. Nice assistant.
Angela Lansbury, alive.
Yay, good for her.
Yay.
I'm not a dick. I wasn't rooting for her to die. Yeah. I was just curious. I didn't know.
Anyway, all right. So
we can do last one, or we it's up to you guys.
Dude, one last one, because then I want to talk a little bit to Ben before he takes off.
Last thing. I just – everybody's opinion on the state of the television comedy, because I think this year we had two hits, in my opinion, Brooklyn Nine-Nine and the Goldbergs.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine –
I thought it's gotten better.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You hated the second episode.
I didn't see the first one because, and then I heard the first one was so good, and then I watched the second one, and I my wife and I almost threw each other off the balcony.
You were Paul. Second one was really weak, but it's gotten better. Back on track. And I think it's really funny.
Really? And the Goldbergs is the best family comedy.
Goldbergs is like a more irreverent Wonder Years. Yeah,
it's fantastic.
It's like Wonder Years meets New Girl and Family Guy all wrapped in a ball.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say, is I'm not a huge fan of live action TV comedies. I just don't watch them a lot, but like the song says, lucky there's a Family Guy, because that's what I watch to make me laugh on TV.
Kathy, you got any comedies right now that you're watching?
I've seen Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but it's because that's the video that plays after what I watch on Hulu. and I was really excited for Super Fun Night, and that bombed. It was so good.
I haven't even seen it.
Oh, with Rebel Wilson?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, I heard, I heard that was terrible. She was just problem with her is she's so doing. She's it. Becoming the one note thing. Everything else, like, she's doing, you know, I'm so big, but I'm still sexy, and I'm to this. And that's fine. More power to her, but it just didn't. Same shtick.
Mindy Kaling does the same thing over and over again, but she still finds a way to make it funny.
Because she doesn't make it in her show. It's not just about her. Mm-hmm. Like, because my wife watches that show, and I watch it with her too. And like, it's Mindy the ensemble Project, cast, the Mindy Project,
without a doubt.
And it's, the only thing I didn't like about it was the last. Who's the kid from that I told you was terrible on the show that was just did Red Dawn?
Josh Peck.
Oh my God, he was so bad on the show. But anyway,
not a fan.
No,
there's a really fun.
Did anyone sit through Dads yet?
No, I heard
that. Yeah, yeah, that was.
Are you in it?
No.
I heard you do that to somebody if you don't like them.
Yeah,
you make them watch
that. A buddy of mine plays the Asian guy in the first episode, where the episode ends with a series of racist Asian penis jokes. Wow. And it's like, this is how you end your pilot? You say, here you go, America.
Yeah.
This is the humor we're bringing to you.
You know what, Ben? I fancy myself a tough guy, and I was watching that in the green room in Tempe, and I turned it off within 10 minutes. It just felt so bad, because a lot of these sitcoms, they're almost too well-lit now. They're almost too well-lit, and they look too HD, and you can't tell what's going on.
It goes back to the network television. Shoot it harder. Yeah. It's just like that single cam, that kind of stuff. You got to trend towards where it's going. Don't come back.
Yeah, I agree. Now, you bring in also, Josh, about comedies in general, because we're talking network and stuff too, but another comedy, and from Schmoville, and one of our buddies is on the show, Steve Renazzisi, is The League. The League has been consistent, and Steve's apparently coming back on the show within the next couple of weeks, so we'll figure that out too. But I want to talk a little bit, before we have about 5 minutes left, I want to talk to Ben Bagley, at Ben Bagley Comedy. You can also go to benbagley.com. Now, Ben, you have a web series called Clueless.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about it? It's 24 spoof?
No, I have two web series. One I did at 24 spoof a year or two ago. It's called 24 Minutes, and I play Stack Power, the neighborhood watch coordinator of Burbank, trying to stop the Glendale terrorist.
It's fantastic.
Destroying the Burbank annual barbecue.
That sounds like the real life Ken Knapp song.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
That's true.
There's a lot of yelling and whispering in it. It's pretty fun.
That's
and
funny.
Then,
damn it.
That's on 24minutes.com. And then Clueless, spelled Clued-Less. It's my girlfriend's project. She wrote it, and I helped her produce it. And it's about her real-life stories as a murder mystery entertainer. It's kind of like Party Down meets Clue, is how we pitch it.
See Angela Lansbury make a cameo?
Yeah, we're working on it for season two. All right. We're working on it.
Now that she's alive, you can make it.
Yeah, I know. I can make it a reality. Yeah. I thought we were going to have to...
Do you still enjoy, because I see you all the time on TV in different commercials, do you still enjoy doing the commercial circuit because it's just it's a day shoot, it's a 2-day shoot, or are you trying to move on to other bigger and better things?
You're going
to
be in Parks and Rec, aren't you?
Yeah, I got a couple lines on that. I shot that this week. That was really fun. I did a movie in the beginning of the year called The Hungover Games, where I play Ed Helms from The Hangover, and the Wolfpack gets wasted and wakes up in The Hunger Games.
Oh, that's fun.
And it's Jamie Kennedy produced it. It's super vulgar. It's not like one of those spoof movies where they just cram in a bunch of shit and it makes no sense. Yeah. This one follows the through line of The Hunger Games.
Where can we find that?
We're waiting to find out if it's going to theaters. But it's going to definitely get DVD and everything.
Oh, great.
That answers my question about commercial acting. Jesus, I asked him about commercials. He's like, how about TV and movies, guy?
Well, before we go to break, one last thing, too, is that according to Josh McCougar, the Wild Man, you have the most DVDs in the history of Planet that anyone's ever seen. How many DVDs do you have?
I have over 1,500 DVDs and probably over 300 or 400 Blu-rays now.
That's a lot.
How happy are you that you didn't back DivX in 1999?
I'm very happy I didn't do that, and I'm happy I didn't go with a HD DVD.
Laserdisc.
Laserdisc would have been embarrassing.
Ben, thank you for joining us
tonight.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun.
You're a very funny human, and on behalf of all of us here at Schmozno, how about you stop watching those damn DVDs and put on some Breaking Bad ones?
I will do that. Yeah. I'll stop watching some Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and put on some Breaking Bad.
Check out Ben Bagley at Ben Bagley Comedy, BenBagley.com. When we get back, we're going to have Tim Dowling, screenwriter, on the Schmozno Show for Kathy Kelly, Christian Harloff, Mark Ellis, the whole crew. Be back in just a sec. Lose my head to the chemical freeway. Coming up on the road. Get an expert news.
listening to the Toad Hop Network, radio worth watching.
What's up, Toadheads? Hey, make sure you check out the Toad Hop store on ToadHopNetwork.com. It's a great way to support the network and helps continue to bring you quality programming.
Quality programming, my ass.
Can you see I'm recording, you a**hole?
So maybe you've got a great idea for a business and want to start selling your products or services online. Maybe you're an established business owner looking for new customers. Or maybe you're interested in starting a personal website. No matter who you are, GoDaddy wants to help you kick ass online. Right now, GoDaddy's offering .com domains for just $1.99. It's go time. Start your website today. Visit GoDaddy.com and enter promo code TOAD to get your $1.99.com or click on the GoDaddy graphic on the Toad Hop website. Some limitations apply. See website for details.
To leave your house to shop, to crawl through traffic to the mall,
just to find the thing you wanted,
isn't even there at all.
Amazon.com is the answer.
Shop at home in style and ease.
Find exactly what you want.
Ordering your stuff's a breeze.
Books on tape.
Games galore.
Everything you're looking for.
Kindle.
Cameras. Electronics.
Baby Einstein.
Hooked on Phonics.
Blu-ray.
Movies.
And TV.
Download.
Music.
MP3.
Pixar.
Disney. Microphones.
Pet supplies and doggy bones.
World of Warcraft.
Nancy Drew.
Sims.
The Scruff System too.
Click Amazon.
You'll smile with glee.
Sometimes shipping's even free.
What's up, everyone? Sports Guru here. Sick of looking at the same old boring websites? Well, check out thenewsportsguru.com for all the hottest trending videos and all the biggest sports news. Become a VIP for only $4.99 and get premium access to everything the Sports Guru has to offer. The beautiful gurus, girls, all my biggest sports picks, and much more. So get off that porn site and check out thenewsportsguru.com.
Is that hunk of junk you call a car always breaking down and leaving you in the dust? Log on to Dyson-Motors.com and check out Dyson's full inventory online. With hundreds of quality cars in stock of all makes and models, you can find the next car of your dreams in minutes. And know you're getting super low pricing. Purchase a car today from Dyson Motors and receive a year of free oil changes. Bad credit? Worried about financing? Log on and get pre-approved in seconds. Go to Dyson-Motors.com and find your new car today.
With Gamefly, choose from over 6,000 titles. Play as long as you want and send them back when you're done. $8.95 to start. No late fees. Gamefly.com. Games delivered.
You're listening to the Toad Hop Network. Radio worth watching.
Don't guess yet. All the music that comes, by the way, is from the Schmoville. We post on Facebook, Kathy, every Thursday morning. I ask them to submit music, and they put the YouTube links, the score. And
I already
always
got
pick
it.
Great.
All
you know what it is?
Music, I got it.
Movie music. Okay. It's great stuff. You know what it is?
Yeah.
What do you got?
This is me practicing piano in third grade.
That is not correct.
Home videos?
Yeah.
Jenny, you know what we have here?
I used to rock the piano.
This is the American Psycho theme. Pretty good.
Star Wars theme on the piano back in the day.
Well, besides Schmoville being great week in and week out, also the other people that are great is the great people at Ripped Apparel.
Love them to death.
They are so good. And Mark is wearing a shirt. Copster, why don't you stand behind me for a second? Well, Copster's got a, you can see, look at that. That is a Ripped Apparel shirt
Hold
as well.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah, Copster is a Jurassic Park shirt. Thank you, sir.
One of the best lines from that movie.
Well, hold on
to your butts. Yeah.
Because, again, and Costner's been a fan of Rip for a long time. One of the reasons, too, is because they're just so good at what they do. They mix great movies together. If you're a movie fan, you should check out RiftApparel.com. You can go to the widget right now on our Toad Hop page or just type in RiftApparel.com and check it out. If you type in still for this for October, SK Carry, you can get $1 off the shirt. And it is worth it. There's some good ones. And there are really good ones coming up right now, too.
Yeah. Sometimes we get to take a little peek at what's coming out. And definitely check the site often this week. The code is SK Carry.
Yep.
Like the movie. The movie wasn't better, but at least the movie gets you $1 off for the rest of October.
Well, what else? Yeah. How else can people get, like, what other discounts could you give Schmoville as a comedian, my friend? What could you do?
Christian, I got a gig coming up. And
you too.
As you know, every comic dreams of playing the Celebrity Ballroom in Reno, Nevada.
Yeah, that's not true.
I will be there November 9th.
Okay.
So it's a one-off on Saturday. So if you live in Reno, come on out. See me do stand-up in a theater.
Okay. Well, so while we wait for Tim Dowling, who's our guest, now, it is only fair because we do this to Tiffany all the time. Let's get to know our co-host a little bit.
Okay. Now, I was in with the 50 Shades of Grey, and then
we ask Tiffany this stuff all the time, and you're sitting in a chair, and we've asked, and when Katie's here and Bonnie's here, we always ask them. So
Kathy, are you single?
Yes, I am.
Uh-oh. Okay, you're
That's
single
not the question. Is what point in your life did you date Christian Harloff? That's what everybody wants to know.
That never happened.
Is what years was it?
That officially never happened.
But, man, you only got a thing for blondes. Oh, I'm sorry. Kathy's in the seat now. Kathy's in the seat. I apologize.
All right. So that I'm asking because, again, we were going to set up Tiffany with Bobby Finstock, which is going to be interesting. How do you feel Bobby Finstock and Tiffany would have been in a date?
I think they would have been really cute.
Right?
Weren't they beer pong partners at Maria's party? I feel like this is...
They have a love-hate thing, but something. Now, you know, I don't think
so
Tiffany's...
So do most marriages.
Okay, but look, I don't think Tiffany's heart would be broken if maybe... You and
that's
Bobby
what,
Finstock.
That's what I was going to ask you. What if we did a
happen to have a rendezvous?
What if we did a Schmo Plus video? And then, you know, I'm going to let you choose. And if you don't want to do, you don't have to do it. But I think it would be fun to do if we did a Schmo Plus video where you would go on a date with someone in the podcast.
Okay.
You can pick who you want.
This sounds like a show that you've already said.
Well, a show that I feel like what the Celebrity Impression Dating Game?
No.
The Bachelor? Yeah. No, it is not the Bachelor. This is one. But again, you're gonna have the flip cam. The unfortunate part is you're gonna have either JTI or Copster with.
Do I get to pick where the date happens?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
You're gonna be. Able
I
want to
see. She's taking control right away.
I'm gonna give you picks of who you can choose.
Okay.
And at the end of the show, you can think about it, and then if you want to do it, you can pick. All right. So you got either the Wild Man Josh McCuga.
Okay.
You got Ken Napsok.
Okay.
Mark Riley.
Okay.
I'm
not
Johnny in. Is married.
No, I'm not Ellis, in. No, Ellis, it's a, Ellis, you can't date a schmo.
You can't date a schmo.
It's not that easy, Kelly.
Okay. So it's Macuga, Riley, or Napsok. Those are your three choices.
Okay.
So you have to pick at the end.
She can't date Finstock.
And Finstock. So at the end, those four. At the end of the night, you pick, and then we'll talk about it at the very end. Okay? All right. But now, without any further ado, we have a great, great guest here.
You can't pick one of the schmoes because we're going to be there to rescue you.
Yeah.
We're
going to comment.
So, yeah.
Oh, no. I liked Tim Dowling so much, and then he sat down with a Boston Red Sox hat on, and now my life is...
We totally lost him.
Can't look at him. Joining us now, we're very happy to have in the studio. He is a very successful screenwriter, and a friend of Mark Riley's, our good buddy Yodi, and that would be one Tim Dowling. Tim,
yes,
welcome
sir.
To Schmoville.
Hey.
Guys.
Thanks for
Yankees
having me.
Course, Yankees
stop
suck.
It.
Yankees
stop
suck.
It. Stop it. Stop
I'm an
it.
Orioles fan. I have no idea what it's like to play baseball in October.
Tim is here with us tonight, and we're going to talk about some of the things that he's done, some upcoming things, more stuff like, you know, what you're a fan of. You're a movie fan, obviously. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in the business that we're in.
Yeah. I see way too many movies.
Do you?
Which is probably why I'm still single. But
welcome to the club, my friend.
Yeah, you're just dating the wrong women then, man. Seriously, maybe we should put you on the list also.
Is he gonna get to choose which guy he goes on a date with, too?
I missed out on this. What was the date thing you're being set up?
Here's what we did. Kathy's filling in tonight for our regular co-host, Tiffany Smith, and we always make Tiffany go on dates and set her up with
because it makes her squeamish.
Yeah, but it doesn't make Kathy scream. So we said, okay,
no,
at the
does.
End,
I'm just
it does.
To show it.
Yeah. Well, it's working.
Acting
at the end, we're making her pick between four of our Schmoville regulars, our Schmo's regulars, of who she's going to go out on the date with. So, and then we're going to take either one or both of the interns are going to follow them around with the camera and we'll get it. So
it sounds amazing.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
I feel like this should be a two cam shoot.
Well, we'll get it. Yeah.
She just wants absolutely. More bodies there.
Protection. She wants protection. Yeah. But let's not talk about dates. Let's talk about Tim Dowling. Tim, now you met Mark Riley at USC.
Yes. We were both in the theater school at USC. And I think you guys had Danny Strong on one time.
We did. And we also had on Professor Jim Wilson. Did you have
Jim Wilson, but I've heard good things.
Okay. So, well,
he's
all right.
A man's man.
So you and Danny are friends as well?
Yeah. Danny, I assume you guys know, he's a very fancy screenwriter. Yeah. I'm here with The Butler, and he mm-hmm. won an Emmy for Game Change. And Danny and I are both in theater school with Mark at USC. And, you know, every time we see each other, we joke we spent a lot of money getting all this theater training. We both made a nice living as writers.
Right.
But my big thing is that Danny like, wins an award every time he sneezes. And I write movies where kids swear. So,
Let me ask you about theater school then, because a lot of kids listen to this who are thinking about going to college and they want to do something in film.
Yeah.
Is theater school in USC is a renowned kind of film institute.
Yeah.
And so when you go to theater school, were you training for acting or is there... You can focus on I want to be a screenwriter within the realm of theater, or is that just for people who are aspiring actors?
Well, there's different degree things. I love that I'm going to talk about USC if you apply. Yeah. But you can be if you're a BFA, like a Bachelor of Fine Arts, you're basically doing like all theater all the time. And I didn't really want to do that. You have some general ed classes you can take, but I was like a Bachelor of Arts guy, and so like, I wasn't writing at that point, but, like, I took screenwriting classes when I was there, and I took a lot of film classes.
That's where
you
got the
law and history. And so, like, I'd say if you want to get into the business, if you go to a school like that, like, take advantage of it. It's, like, a great school, and there's all these different, you know, classes and programs. It's, like, don't just, like, be so laser focused on your thing.
Right.
And I think in this industry, too, like the fact that I was an actor, I think, helps my writing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and stuff. And I hear that a lot from
you can, like,
executives.
Write performances and stuff. You mean, as far as you know what you want from the character?
Well, I think that's the thing is that a lot of times, like, a lot of the movies I've done and different things, like, it started out, like, I'll get hired to, like, you know, basically a movie gets made for the most part, although it's changing now, if, like, the studio's spending a lot of money on that movie. So they'll have a list of actors that they're willing to spend, like, $30 or $100 million to make a movie with. And so basically if you get one or two of those actors and you get a director they'd make the movie with, then they'll make that movie, most likely. So most of the stuff that I've done is, like, hey, we can't cast this, or, like, we have an idea that we like, but we want you to come on and write interesting characters and sort of, like, make the movie funnier and set pieces so we can try to get some of these actors.
Yeah.
And I think definitely because I was an actor, like, I always come from it from a place of, like, okay, well, what would I want to do?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, if you're in a comedy, you want say funny lines, like, you want to have good dialogue and you want to have, like, situations where you have stuff to play and interesting relationships. And so I think that was definitely beneficial for me to, you know, having come from that place. And I think the flip side, I forget who it was, but Sean Penn, I read this quote recently, I forget who he said, I think he said it to George Clooney or something, that he's like, even if you never make a movie again, like, any actor should direct at some point just so you appreciate how hard it is on the other side and you know what they're dealing with.
And sometimes, like, again, like yourself and Danny String, you catch that bug on the other side.
Yeah.
To where, and because the other thing I want to talk to you about, too, this is something that was – I loved this very much, was your short film that really got you started.
Oh, thanks.
And that would be George Lucas in Love. which that now, that was so great because, and you can tell obviously that you were a movie fan basing it off of what the premise was, Shakespeare in Love, and the way you set it up, and obviously you're a Star Wars fan.
Yeah.
Now, how did that all come to be? What was the inspiration behind it? Like, kind of take us through that process of, okay, I'm going to write this thing, and then take me through the exposure you got from and how that kind of jump started.
I'll try to tell it quick because it's a long story.
Yeah.
But basically, this guy, Joe Nussbaum, who went to USC and was a director, we were in a comedy troupe at USC called Comedus Interruptus. And he did this, it's called the 480 at USC. It's like your big senior thesis film. And they pick like four directors every semester to do it. So Joe did one of those and I starred in it. And, you know, people liked it, but it looked like a student film. Yeah. And so he got some attention. But there was like a, in kind of like a fad that was happening around that time, like South Park, I don't know if you guys know how that started, but there was this short film, and this is back, I mean, it's crazy. It's like, you know, no one has VHSs anymore, but
true,
it was like someone would make a buzz about short film, and it was very sort of inside or
like
Hollywood.
Like the Jesus versus Santa thing?
Yeah, and then just, you would see like every 6 months I get, hey, you got to watch this thing, and it'd be like one like dub worse than the last one, you know, it just got, VHS capes just got passed
It's
got
to piss you off, the technology today. You're like, you kids with your YouTube. YouTube, and it's so easy to make a movie.
But you know, it's funny. We actually, we talk about this, like, we, and I'll get to that in a second, but like, I don't know that we would have been as successful today with, because there's so much stuff out there and it's so easy to find. But anyway, at the time, they, like, the guys did South Park. It came from that short. And so I was bugging Joe to make like one of these sort of like short spoofs. And so we were trying to come up with an idea, and I saw an early screening of Shakespeare in Love, and I was like, this is great. Like, and I just love the template of, like, you know, especially having been to theater school and read a lot of Shakespeare plays, but I was like, it would be fun to do that in, like, modern Hollywood, like, take a screenwriter, and we were trying to decide, like, who to make it about. And Joe and I are big Star Wars fans, and one day it was, like, George Lucas. And we're like, George Lucas in Love? Okay, well, who's he in love with? And because we know the movie so well, like, we really came up with most of it, like, calling each other back and forth and, like, emailing, like, that morning. It was like, all right, well, maybe he's a student at USC in the 60s. He's got writer's block. He's making these short films that he wants to be important, and he's struggling with it. And I'm like, well, who's he fall in love with? It's like, well, maybe there's, like, a girl that's leading the student rebellion, you know, and has the hair buns, and it turns out to be his sister. And we're like, well, there's the movie. And then it was like, you know, filling all the different jokes. And we had this thing where the guy that lives next door to him, like, come in, and he's like our Vader character, and he's dressed in black, and he's like, George, I wrote three great scripts this week. What have you done? And he's got the asthma inhaler. And I met George Lucas briefly a couple years ago at USC. And, you know, I told him this, and he's a shy guy and stuff. And then I think he was trying to think of something to say. And we heard this from someone else, but I thought it was really interesting. He goes, do you know the one thing you got wrong? And I was like, no, what? And he goes, the guy next door is John Milius. Like, that was the guy that lived next door to me.
Oh, that's
and apparently that happened. Like, Milius, who wrote Apocalypse Now and Conan the Barbarian.
By pure coincidence?
Yeah, it was just like, he was that guy. And he was kind of a dick and would come and, like, taunt Lucas. And they were friends and stuff. And he thought that we knew that and we based it off him, but we named him wrong. And so,
Darth Milius.
There you go.
He's in episode 7, apparently.
Yeah, it's always cool to get a note from George Lucas. Even after the fact and the movie's done. It's like,
he's like, you should redub it. And I was like, yeah, for the special edition.
Can I borrow some of your sound effects?
No one screams no in it, though.
Okay? No one does. Yeah. But anyway, I mean, he was our hero. So we made it as kind of a love letter to him. Yeah. And we did it to get Joe attention, and we made a bunch of VHS tapes. And this is, if you want another long story, kind of interesting.
Please, dude, great. It's great stuff.
So we just wanted to, like, float them around town and try to get as anyone we could see as possible. And our friend Jim Ryan, who also went there, he worked at DreamWorks Animation. So, like, Jim was an extra in the movie, like, walking past. And I, like, brought him the VHS tape, like, his copy. And, you know, we watched it at work, and people started coming in, like, at DreamWorks Animation to watch it. And he said for the rest of the day, like, people kept coming in and wanting to see it. And so he's, like, making dubs of the tape all day. And at the end of the day, he gets a call from Jeffrey Katzenberg's office, who's the head of DreamWorks Animation, saying, like, hey, Jim, we hear there's a really funny short film. Jeffrey would like to see it. And so Jim, like, marched up to his office, and I don't know if he marched, but maybe he pranced.
You can march with a VHS tape in your hand. That's a power move.
You know Jim, he probably pranced. I hope he's listening to this. But anyway, he gets up there. He gives the tape that I gave him to Katzenberg, and I guess Katzenberg loved it and sent it over to Steven Spielberg. And says, Steven, you got to watch this tape.
Wow.
And Spielberg and Lucas are, you know, known to be best friends. And
wait, I don't mean to cut you off, but at this point, when you hear the story, though, too, because, again, your story, this is your first thing that you really did, and you're hearing that Spielberg has and Katzenberg.
You're hearing the head of anything, like meeting the head of Arby's at that point. Yeah, right. Cool.
We were, when we got that call, we were so excited that the head of Arby's loved the movie. Like, that was amazing. Turns out he was the assistant night manager.
Right.
We
were still, like, really John Arby. Beef and Cheddar's on the house.
Beef and Cheddar's forever. So. Yeah. All right. So
anyway, we heard this story from Spielberg's assistant. So basically, then they sent over Spielberg, and, you know, his assistant got the tape. He gave it to Steven. Steven went to his office, closed the door, and his assistant said you could hear Steven, like, howling with laughter while he's watching it. And then he came out and he goes, get George on the phone. And so he called George Lucas and then was, like, pitching him the movie. I'm like, George, you gotta see this thing, it's hilarious. And he's, like, telling him all the jokes, and then George is like, send it up to me. This is my George Lucas impression. And so he sent it up to George Lucas, who got a kick out of it and really liked it. And we heard through someone else that he said that he's like, it was actually fairly accurate, but I was actually slightly better with women in college than you guys made me out to be.
George Lucas had a thing. When you see pictures of him in college, he's working the Amityville Horror beard.
Yeah.
But he had, like, a kind of a tall,
skinny. For sure. He's probably always shy, but still creative as hell.
Did this come out before the prequels?
That was part of the thing, too, is that we were very lucky for a lot of things, is that I saw Shakespeare in Love before it came out, and then that became a big hit, and then it won the Oscar. Mm-hmm. And then a couple months after the Oscar, we were doing this during the time that, like, the prequels were getting made, and we finished the movie, and we put it out, like, a week after it opened. So they were, like, gigantic and, like, you know, whatever you think about, but they were still, like, one of the biggest movies, one of the biggest movies ever. So I think, like, you know, at that time, Lucas was on the cover of Time, and so it worked out well. Like, it was good timing for us. And I think, you know, same thing for me, is that what happened with it is, you know, it started to pass around. Everyone started to see it and it got a lot of buzz. And, like, Joe got signed by, you know, like, all the agencies wanted him as a client. And he got signed with them, and he was, like, meeting all around. And DreamWorks, you know, hired him to direct a film that didn't get made, which happens all the time. But he got a bunch of movies off it. And then what started to happen, too, is we started to get press, like, everywhere. And then people from around the country wanted to see it. And I know, like, I'm a Star Wars fan. If I heard about that, like, I would want to see this.
That's why I watched it.
And I think it was interesting at the time. Like, we sold, like, a ridiculous number of VHS copies of this movie, because the internet was around, but
YouTube or anything. Yeah,
you couldn't, like, we had it on a site, but, like, I couldn't even watch it. Like, my dial-up was so slow.
I don't have enough free AOL hours to watch this.
Exactly.
At that point, at some sites, you had to, like, the more you clicked, you had to pay for stuff, though, too.
Maybe. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I think, but because it wasn't so easy to watch online, like, we got a video deal, and it was on Amazon.com, and it was, like, their best-selling video for, like, literally, like, 6 months.
And it's a cool thing,
because I think
too.
People were like, oh, I'd pay $10 to see that.
And it's very punk rocky. It's like, it's this underground thing that not everybody can go home and watch instantly. It's like, oh, did you get this? It's like the fucking tape in the ring. It's like, oh, this is cool.
And if you watch it, you do die. But if you watch it, you do die. So, unfortunately...
You took out half your audience.
But again, the thing was, like Tim was saying, it's because Shakespeare in Love was huge and Star Wars was huge. You really did. I mean, that was the time to cash in.
It was one of those. I mean, I guess when you look at a lot of successful things, I mean, it's like it's one of those things where everything has to come together. And like the movie, Joe did a great job. You know, I think part one of his thing, too, that I think really benefited us beyond the content of the movie was like, look, if I'm going to do this, I need to make it look like a real movie. And so at the time, like, you know, I mean, he shot on 35, which most stuff, you know, didn't at that point. So the movie looked great and was like really well shot by this guy, Eric Haze. And it looked really good. And our friend Debbie Laurie was a big composer and I did the music. And so I think it was one of those things for executives that aren't used to watching student films.
Yeah.
Like it looked like a little movie. And I think that's why when people saw it, they're like, oh, wow, this guy can direct. Like we should be in business with him.
Well, how happened for you, though? So what happened with you?
It's interesting. For me, like, you know, and I think the directors usually get the big stuff off that,
right.
Is that it was more like I did it as a favor to Joe. Like, how can I, you know, it's like, what's an idea to help my friend out? And I think after that, I did another short with another friend around that time. And, you know, people started asking me, I was acting mainly then. They're like, well, do you want to write? And I was like, maybe. And I started thinking about it more and more. And, you know, in between auditions, which were long times in between auditions, I was like, well, you know, I should write something. And so, like, about a year later, I wrote a script. It's called Back to the Teen Movie, and it was basically it was a spoof of it was making fun of the whole gross out trend and like all the teen movies that were coming out at that time, and it became like my sample script, and like I got an agent off him, and partially because of Joe is that Joe read it and wanted to direct it, and I didn't have representation, so he gave it to his agent and his manager, and they're like, this is great, we should go out with this. And it didn't sell, but people seemed to like it, and so it started for me a process of like meeting everybody, and I was meeting producers and studio execs and whatever, and everybody's like, oh, I can't believe your script didn't sell for $1 million. And I was like, well, he didn't buy it. but it was like, what are you doing next? And then I literally, you know, this is a long story, but I then spent a couple of years, I mean, it was years actually, like about 4 years of like writing script after script and like meeting everybody and like doing a pitch and going in there and doing the whole thing. And then like, we were always so close, but I never sold anything.
Right.
And I finally got to the point of like,
do you have a writing? Give a writing partner as well.
No, it's just me. I always say we as in like it's my, you know, I don't
your team
bring
and
the script
like,
out with
like,
it.
So when the boxers come out, they're fighting by themselves. They go, oh, you know, we took a lot of punches tonight.
It's true.
Like,
I refer to myself as we when I go on dates. I'm like, look, we just didn't bring our A game.
You and your multiple personalities.
Yeah, it's true.
And like funny Mark Crush, but then fat Ellis ate all the pasta.
One of his personalities will be available.
But say, I think these two crazy kids. I
know, right?
We have a winner right now.
Well, I'm not allowed to.
He's not allowed.
We've been dating for years.
Oh, that's awesome.
He made the rule. He said, because he's right, because we have to review the date. But let's
can't date a figurehead.
We'll worry about that later.
By the way, who chooses who you get to go on the date?
She does.
Oh, well,
you know what?
I also get to choose where we go.
He's got an adorable T-shirt on for the viewers on the inner web.
He's talking about Mark Gill.
See, Christian, this is what I'm talking about. This is why Boston Red Sox fans are better than Yankees fans.
Because I'm telling you, no, you're right. Just stay there.
I want to spin it right back to the story just for a sec, because one of our loyal Schmobilians, George McCann, tweeted in. He wants to know, is the Star Wars George Lucas in love? Is that available anywhere to actual purchase?
I would say it's I don't think it's on YouTube, and because we didn't have the internet
rights. Just sell it in VHS.
I think, you know, I'm willing to bet if you go on eBay, I'm sure there's like, because we put it on DVD too, which looks a lot better. I'm sure you could find the DVD someplace. We made a Blu-ray of it, but like there was actually talk. It was almost on the Star Wars Blu-ray, and like they were gonna
include
it.
That would have been awesome.
It would have been amazing. We were so psyched, and like it came up because there's like a documentary on fan films, and they wanted it to be on it. And at the end of the day, I heard George, you know, which I totally get. He's like, you know, I want to be about the films, not about me. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, we'll do the more of the fan films that like, you know, deal with Stormtroopers and Darth Vader.
Man,
and stuff.
If you just put Darth Milieu in there.
Yeah, that's true. Darth Milieu.
But no, I bet if you go on eBay, you could probably find it.
George
stuff,
McCann, knowing that guy, he'll be able to find it somewhere.
Well, good luck, George McCann.
Well, speaking of, I believe, who do we have on the phone right now?
Yo, it's Georgie. What's up, guys?
George McCann.
Is it George McCann?
Yeah, it
that's
George,
amazing.
George McCann is a... Is
oh,
a,
George McCann.
George
sorry.
McCann.
Sorry. I thought we were talking to George McKay.
We have George Takei on the line, George.
The reason I'm putting George McCann on the phone with you, Tim, is because George is an aspiring writer.
Okay.
He's very interested in the business and how it works, so George is tweeting in. Don't worry about long stories. The fans are loving everything you're saying. So, George... You have Tim Dowling, successful screenwriter, on the line. You have one question. What would you like to ask him? Still there?
What advice would you have? I guess that's the one question, right? What advice?
I'd say the biggest thing, and I guess it's two pieces of advice, is that you just need to write and stuff. And, like, you know, you want you want your script to be as good as possible before you hand it out and give it to other people. But I think the mistake a lot of people make is they spend 5 years writing one script. And you know what? Unfortunately, like, you're probably not going to sell that script, that one. Like, and someone told me when I started, they're like, you probably have to write 10 scripts before you sell one. I'm like, what?
Right.
You're like, one script is so hard.
And you're like, but I really like this movie I'm working on, so that's the one I want to sell. So maybe I'll write something and shittier and still I can get to the one
and
I like.
Is that like just because you're getting, you want to get the licks in there? Is that what
well,
it
is? Well, no. I mean, by the way, you might sell that script. But my point is that it's
not
like,
everything is boxing.
Most of the time, probably not. And so it's like, you write a script, make it as good as possible, and you send it out into the world and you try to sell it.
Right,
and if it doesn't sell, I think the mistake a lot of people make, and you know, we all do this when you love something, you put your heart and soul into it, is that all they do is try to sell that one thing you know, for years. And it's like, you got to move on at some point and like write another one. And then if that doesn't work, write another one. And I really do believe that if you're talented and you're persistent, that I think eventually something will pay off. But I think if you spend 5 years writing one thing and then you spend another 5 years like trying to pimp that one out, it's like you're lessening your odds of selling anything.
I agree. And like, again, because I worked in development
for
Joel Silver for like 3 years. And so when we were there, like, again, a lot of the writers that would send stuff in, you'd get spec stuff that they would use as their sample, but that sample was used to try to get them the job on the big project. I guess Tim Georgie would be able to do this more now because he's established himself to where, like, if he has like an original script that he wants to do, now he would more or less, correct me if I'm wrong, Tim, would submit that one now because you're like, okay, now I probably can get more benefits. I'll have more creative control maybe on an original script as opposed to a new writer who puts something out there and they're just going to gut it. They'll buy it from you. You'll get maybe, you know, maybe $100,000 or something if you're lucky. And then, and it's gone from you. You have no control over it. So, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for writers, you generally, if you sell something, you don't really have a lot of control over it in film. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, the hard thing about this business too is, you know, there's no one way in. It can happen so many different ways. But, you know, your best win is you have to prove. And I think that's why, not that writing is easy, but I think it's easier as a writer for me personally than to direct or to act, because you're going to have someone have to let you direct unless you have a lot of money to show people what you can do. And same thing with acting. But like, you can write a script. You know, and then you can write another script. And so you can really like prove to people what you can do. Not that it's easy because everyone's writing a script, but I think you have a little more control of saying like, hey, you know what, this is what I can do. And
all right.
Can I just ask one other thing real quick?
Of course, Georgie, go ahead.
Do you think the festival system really holds any weight at this point, or is it not really worth the time?
In terms of like for a film or for like,
do you mean
writing
for
scripts?
Do you mean for a writer, or what do you mean specifically?
For a writer.
You know, to be honest, I don't know that much about it. Like, I didn't – that wasn't the path that I sort of did.
What, do they go to, like, festivals and peddle out scripts? Is that what you can
do? Yeah, I guess like because you can do smaller – I guess the thing is, too, because you could probably – if you go to the circuits –
make contacts and –
Yeah, your contacts, you can – because if it's easier – I guess easier because Tim works in the big budget – world, like for smaller writers, if you want to get into the Sundances of the world and stuff like that, maybe you do smaller films. You work
well,
in front
of a
director.
Definitely, if you make a really good small film, I think you know, doing festivals is a great way to get attention to it and get people to see it. I don't really know in terms of if you just have a script and you haven't made a film, how that works at festivals, unless it's a competition. But look, anything helps. I mean, if you win a competition at a festival, or if you know. It's like, and maybe some managers there, agents, like maybe they read your script.
Yeah. Just
you know,
try to sleep with a director at a festival.
You should totally try to sleep with a director at a festival.
It's probably easier to stalk people in Park City, Utah, than it would be anywhere else.
Go to the Austin.
Georgie, thanks for
I love that the advice is to go stalk a director in Sundance.
All right, let's get back.
That'll go over well.
I want to hear more about the Tim path. So Tim,
who doesn't?
How much of screenwriting takes place at Starbucks?
Yeah.
You know, I haven't. I don't drink coffee, and so I haven't done it in a while, but I used to write more at night, totally, and there was a 24-hour Starbucks in Sherman Oaks, like near where I lived, and I often was there.
Really?
And it doesn't anymore, which kind of sucks, because it's good to get outside of your house, and I think when you're in a Starbucks and like you can't wander around and do something else, it forces you to work. But I used to go at like 2 a.m. and write, and it would be packed. Like there'd be guys there with guitars. I don't know what they were doing at 2 a.m.
Is this the open mic night? No, it's not.
It's not. It's a Starbucks.
We're writing screenplays in here, guy.
But I will say that I heard they were going to start maybe having alcohol, and if Starbucks started to have wine, I would probably go write it.
Yeah,
Starbucks
is going to start to do that. Yeah, and like serve like wine and cheese and shit. Yeah.
Then would they close at 2 a.m. a.m. like everything.
Like it's a bar, yeah, that's right.
So there you go.
Yeah.
I guess I could just go to a bar. I mean, there's, that'd be probably, weird to... there's probably a few of those in L.A.
Yeah. Hey, I'm hammered. I need a cab. Where are you? Yeah. Starbucks.
Mine's as good as great. I'm drunk.
So yeah, that's a real writer for you is the guys that work at night. They work into the wee hours of the morning. They go to bed at 5 after a Grand Slam breakfast.
Right.
So let's stay on the Tim train here. What, what was your next big play? When you're working on these scripts, you're trying to sell them.
Yeah, so basically, it's like, I was doing all that stuff, and I basically hit a point of, like, everybody's like, well, you know, it's darkest before it happens. I was like, it's been so dark.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so I've hit so many low points. But I basically got to a point where I had a script I was really happy with, and, you know, man, I was happy with all of them. And I thought it was very commercial, and it didn't sell, and I was doing the round of meetings again. And I felt like I was finally a little jaded of, like, I've been doing this for 4 years. None of these meetings have turned into anything. Like, this is a waste of time.
Right.
And I was like, I don't.
4 years since
4 years after my first script.
Okay.
And I was like, I don't know what to do differently than what I'm doing, I'm doing is not working.
Okay.
And then, you know, I was at a meeting, like, literally that day, and I mentioned an idea, and it was around the Kerry, like, Bush election, and I was reading about outsourcing a lot. And do you guys remember Gung Ho, the Ron Howard, Michael Keaton?
Of course.
Love Michael Keaton.
Yeah. And he was a great G.I. Joe character, too, Gung Ho.
Yeah, he was. That's true.
He was a good one. He had the pulse.
Who was the meeting with?
It was this guy named Jonathan Caden at Columbia Pictures at Sony. And we were just talking about other ideas, and I was like, you know, I had this idea the other day, and it's not really that fleshed out. And I was like, you know, I've been reading about outsourcing a lot and all these towns that were – you know, where everybody works at this factory, gets shut down and outsourced to, like, you know, Malaysia or something. And I was like, you know, I was thinking of a comedy kind of like Gung Ho and, like, set in a small town. Like, everyone works at this factory. The factory gets shut down and outsourced. They don't know what to do because this is the only thing they're good at. And, like, a Vince Vaughn type guy and an Owen Wilson type guy decide they're going to go to Malaysia and get their old jobs back. And they end up kind of, like, Americanizing the place and starting a union. And I was like – and I'll tell you, this is exactly what I pitched. And I was like – and the dollar goes really far there, so they rent a mansion, they have, like, a manservant. And because, like, you know, unlike our laws here, like, no Americans are really gone to Malaysia looking for work. Like the company's like, we don't want you to work here, but there's no law against it. And so that was basically it. And, you know, and I think it is kind of a high concept idea, and it was sort of current, is he's like, oh, wow, I really like that. And people say that a lot, and he's like, you should flesh it out and come back and pitch it.
And you'd been actually thinking about this for a while. This wasn't just something you pulled out of your ass.
No, I mean, it was like a current idea, but I didn't have anything more than why I just pitched you guys. It was like, this is the sort of thing.
And that
takes
some rocks, doesn't it? Yeah. Be like, you're in a meeting at Columbia Pictures, you're like, oh yeah, I thought of this in the bathroom before I came in. That's ballsy, man.
Well, it was a couple weeks, but I hadn't, like, usually when you pitch something, like I can tell you every detail about it. And I think what I realized with this one, too, is that I think when stuff sells, like, sometimes when you go in, like, usually the people you're pitching to, like, are not the people who can actually pull the trigger and buy it. So they have to repitch it to their bosses. And I was an actor, and so I found in my pitches, like, I'd be doing characters, and I'd be acting scenes
out.
And
it's entertaining.
And they'd be laughing, and they would love it. But then when they repitch it to their bosses, they're not going to remember everything I said. They're not going to do what I was going to do.
They can't sell it the same way.
So they're going to pitch that, like, core idea, which is basically what I pitched him. And I think that's why, like, they did buy that core idea. So anyway, this was pre-Wedding Crashers. They were shooting the movie then. I just sort of tossed those guys out. I was like, I think they're funny guys. And a week later, I get a call from my agent. She's like, this is kind of crazy. So Jonathan Caden pitched. They signed a deal with Eric Gold, who has his company Mosaic, and they rep Vince Vaughn. And, you know, he called Eric. Eric loved the idea. He pitched it to Vince. Vince loved the idea. And they're shooting Wedding Crashers. Vince pitched it to Owen. They love the idea. They want to hire you to write it. And I was like, shit. That's great. I got hired to do that. And then I spent, and that became the script. And it's funny, it hasn't gotten made yet, but that became, like, my, like, calling card script that for whatever reason everyone read. And, you know, got on the blacklist before the blacklist was, like, a huge thing. It was one of those things where, for whatever reason, it floated around and stuff. And it's almost gotten made a bunch of times. It hasn't, but it led to Role Models pretty directly. It led to this movie, This Means War, that came out last year that I did.
Yeah. Well, that's why I want to, but don't skip over Role Models. Models, we got to talk about.
I loved Role Models.
That movie, because when you and I, that was one of the first, Mark and I have been reviewing now since 2007.
1964.
That's so amazing.
And actually, Role Models, we reviewed with, do you watch The League?
No, I know it's really funny.
Our buddy Steve Renazzisi, who's one of the stars of The League, reviewed it with us.
Oh, Renazzisi did that one. That's right.
Renazzisi did the Role Models with us. And cool. we, and again, we didn't know what to expect from. We liked Paul Rudd. That movie was, and it was on the other day, and I watched it. It's so funny, dude.
It surprised the hell out of me, too, because I knew Paul Rudd and Sean William Scott were the stars of it, but I grew up a huge, huge fan of The State.
Mm.
And seeing...
Yeah, it's all those guys.
All those guys. I'm like, and those guys have, you know, taken over Hollywood comedy since then, too. So it was just so much of the stuff that I love, and I'm, you know, I love Kiss. So everything in that movie just kind of spoke to me. And that was you. You're the guy.
Yeah, it's one of the things I was saying about George Lucas in Love is, like, you know, you only have so much control, and, like, there are times I think the good movies, it's like, for whatever reason, everything comes together well. It's like, it's the right people at the right time and the right director. And, like, David Wayne, who directed it, who I saw the other night, he did an amazing job, and he was a State guy. And I think which I won't go into because all movies are a long development process. But basically how this one came about is Luke Greenfield is this guy. He did The Girl Next Door. It's a really good movie.
It's really good.
And so Luke was really hot then, and he was developing a script called Big Brother that was a drama about a guy forced into the Big Brother program and, like, you know, probably shouldn't be mentoring kids. but it was, like, totally serious, and it was a drama. And it, you know, they couldn't cast it, and it wasn't really working. And around that time, Luke had read Outsource, my script, that with, you know, basically Outsource is a buddy comedy. We set it in Mexico. I wanted to make, like, an Ivan Reitman, Bill Murray type thing.
Does this goes back, though, again, to where we were just telling George that where you had your script to Outsource to where now, like, this guy's script is really fairly funny. Let's switch this thing over and let's bring in Tim Dowling, maybe see what kind of pitch he's got.
Yeah, that's most everything I've done since then had been something like that, where, like, the studio has, like, a core idea that they like, that they've developed scripts or they bought, but they don't like anything else, and so they're looking for someone to come on and sort of rethink it and reinvent it. This is the only one that switched genres. That was the thing. But basically, I get this call, and they're like, do you want to do this? And he's like, he read my script, and he's like, oh, that's what this should be. It should be a buddy comedy about two guys that are fish out of water in the Big Brother program, not a drama. And so I came on and did, you know, it's like came up with new characters and you know, and stuff and made it a comedy, and, like, the Lair stuff was – do you guys want to hear about that, where that came from?
Please.
So if you've seen the movie, Lair is the live-action interactive role-playing explorers.
LARPing.
Or LARPing is the other one. And, like,
how much adult role-playing have you done, Kathy, in your time?
No, you guys are going to do this on your date.
That would be a great date. Yeah.
Seriously. Kathy, start thinking, because we're about a half an hour away.
You can be the queen, I'll merely be, like, the knight in shining armor that goes around.
If it's not you two on the date, I'm going to be so upset.
It's not. He's not.
You're not in the running?
He's not in the running.
I'm not telling the writer what to write anymore.
I got to go.
I don't make the rules, man.
You just made the rules.
By the way, when you said that, a single tear fell down Kathy's cheek.
Yeah, it's true.
She's a little upset right now.
See, he's a writer. He's
always
poetry.
Thinking. It's
what
true.
He's
writing the Schmoes No Movie. That's the end. Tim Dowling's actually writing the official Schmoes No Movie.
Go ahead and give me the spoiler. I need to know how the shit ends.
So before you get into this, too, because I'm sure maybe if you're going into this, then just skip over it. But so my wife asked me, because it was on again. She's like, do people actually do this? Like the whole role model thing?
Well, that's a good tee off to this. So basically, you know, in the development process, we're like, all right, well, the idea of this movie is the two guys, and originally they were beer salesmen, they became energy drink salesmen later, but it was like two guys that really shouldn't be mentoring kids end up doing it, and they end up being better at it than anybody else because they are honest with them and whatever, and they just bond with them better. But we're like, the kids should also be the worst kids that they get paired with. And so I always had this image in my head of one of the kids being just really odd and socially awkward and showing up in a wizard outfit. And Paul didn't know what to do with that. And Paul's character originally was a little different. Is that when I first wrote it, he was written, you know, as kind of like a young Chevy Chase.
Yeah.
A little more like kind of like cool, charming guy. And Paul was great when he did that when he came in, but it wasn't really him. And so the character became more like Paul. But anyway, I pitched Luke, the original director, and I was like, you know, when I was in high school, I did this play Robin Hood, and like I played Robin Hood and I directed it, and we were trying to figure out how to do the fighting, and the guy played Little John, who was like big guy and he's kind of quiet. His name's Alex Trainer, who I haven't seen since then, and he's like, Tim, me and my friends do this thing in the woods, and I was like, what? And he's like, well, we make swords and we battle in the woods and we fight, and it's kind of like Dungeons and Dragons but real. And I was like, Alex, you fight dragons in the woods? He's like, good. Well, not like real dragons, but it's like Dungeons and Dragons. And so I was like, wait, how does this work? So basically, like, him and his friends did this thing, and so those are the weapons that they're exactly like they are in Role Models that we, like, built for our play. It's like, you buy, you know, you go to the hardware store and you buy, like, a pipe or whatever the thing is, and it's like a plastic thing, and you wrap it with, you know, foam so you don't get hurt, and then you wrap it with silver duct tape. It looks like silver. And these guys would do this thing in the woods, and that's all I ever heard about it. Like, I just thought it was odd, and I never knew that anyone else ever did this.
Amazing.
And so I pitched this to Luke, and Luke's like, that's not real. No one does this. And so I went and looked online, and it's like a huge thing, and a lot of people do this. And so I went back in the next day, go, people do this, and it's a thing, and you can Google it, and there's like a documentary.
Yeah. Kathy's picture on the website, like with a sword.
After
like
you guys go on your date.
Yeah. Lightning bolt.
Uh-huh. I always thought, I'm glad you hear it. I always thought a little bit was inspiration came from the documentary Darkon or Monster Camp.
You know,
there's those two documentaries.
You know, it's interesting. When we were developing this, someone mentioned that to us and gave it to us. I'd already written the script, so, and I was not aware of it, but I watched it after, yeah. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. And it, you know, I think like any great comedy and like a lot of you know, the
Rose
Christopher Guest
here.
Movies,
yeah,
you know, it's like when something's inherently funny, if you take something inherently silly and they take it very seriously. And I thought, you know, and what I tried to do when I was writing it, but I thought David Wayne, who ended up directing the movie, captured it perfectly, is that I was talking to him about this the other night when I ran to him, is that, you know, the third act of the movie, it's great because it's like an action scene. It's a battle. And like you're laughing at it, but you're also – you're not fully making fun of them. Like you're sort of laughing with them, which is kind of what we tried to do with George Lucas in Love, is that we weren't making fun of George Lucas. We were in parts and stuff, but it was like
a celebration of this thing. Like a love letter, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we tried to do with Lair, and I thought David really nailed that tone. And because I think you can also very easily just mock these people and stuff, which we did to a certain extent.
It's
but,
such a fine line. It's like it's with anything like that when you're talking to somebody.
You still
want to
do it. You're watching them. Yeah. You're still watching them.
I wouldn't dress up like Kiss in the Woods.
I absolutely wanted to, because that's the thing. You're like, oh, that's kind of dorky, but I would love to be doing this right now.
I think we should put the Schmoes No LARPing team challenge out there. Anyone wants to challenge us, we'll take it.
Seriously.
Date number
with
2.
With our fans? You guys. Sure you want to do that with our fans? So. No way. No, well, no, date, us. No, that'll be when I have to defend Kathy's honor against all the other suitors.
Yeah, no, that's a good plan. So anyway, that's where Lair came from. And it's just, you know, we worked on that for a while, and I was really happy with the movie. And I think what you said, because I thought about this a lot, is that I think people liked the movie, but it was very under the radar.
Yeah.
But I think it was sort of the start of the Paul Rudd renaissance, is that he was a knocked up like 6 months before. And I think people, like, you know, they grew up on Clueless and other stuff, and he was never a big box office star. But I think everyone around that time was like, I just like Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Like, and I think that really helped us in the movie. It was just
saying,
like,
Scott,
the day that.
Too, though, was showing.
Oh, totally.
Amazing,
and by the way, Sean's amazing. He's the nicest guy in the world. And at the premiere.
And Jane Lynch, too, yeah.
Jane, I mean, the entire cast, like, everyone's so good in that movie. And, you know, but I think it was that we. So, you know, they have tracking, which has proved to be wrong, where they tell you about what the movie's going to do.
Right.
So the day the movie opened, and luckily at that point, like, I was working a lot. So I was, like, fine anyway.
Yeah.
But like one of my agents called me up and he's like, you know, the movie's gonna make probably like $9 million a weekend. Not very good. You know, it's not gonna be great. You'll be fine or whatever. Unfortunately, you know, it's a really good movie, but I don't think people are gonna go see it. And there've been kind of like a late surge, and there was a lot of like great online articles, and I feel like some buzz was sort of like building.
Yeah.
And I think it totally helped us. I think it started like a couple weeks before, which by the way is more common now. You'll notice, and this is something out there, that if you're debating if you want to see a movie and the movie doesn't come out for a couple weeks and you start to see the reviews come online, it means the studio feels like that movie's really good.
Right.
And like Thor comes out like 3 weeks from now, and they've released the, because they have an embargo basically.
I know. We
you guys talking about
even today. No, because we saw Frozen today.
Oh, how is it?
I asked the guy.
Let it go.
No, it's really good. But I asked the publicist beforehand, because there is an embargo on it until November like 12th or something. But going off what you say, there are certain times. Like the other example is The Counselor. The embargo lifted today.
Yeah, I say when you, and look, not always, but when they lifted a couple weeks early, especially for a big movie, is that. They have these embargoes and they don't want their reviews to come out to the day of, because if they're not good, like, they don't want it to hurt the movie. So if they
were finishing effect shots, we can't release it.
Yeah, it's like we can't do the thing.
It's supposed to come out next week. It's coming out in 2017.
If you hear that too, that's a bad sign. If the movie gets pushed back 3 years. Yeah. But anyway, it's like when I saw that the other day and the Thor reviews came out, I was like, Thor must be really good, because they want that word of mouth and the buzz. And
a lot
like
of buzz.
I think that helped with the Avengers too. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that, but it was like a month before.
Oh, yeah. And also the reviews are coming out too. And they released it, we normally release it here, and they released it overseas, and you're absolutely right.
It's because they're confident the word of mouth is going to be
Gravity,
good. And
another one too.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, I think and they didn't really do that then, but they did it on ours, and like, you know, so anyway, I had a feeling, I was like, you know what, they've been doing a lot of like a late push, like I hope we do better than that. And we ended up making 20, which is sort of unheard of, like it doubled the projection that weekend. And you know, we did really well in theaters, but it's really nice that you guys are still talking about. Like, I love that it has like a nice afterlife. And
and
I'm fascinated. I mean, you guys are movie guys.
Yeah.
I'm always fascinated by movies that stick around, because like I forget what year it was, but like the Flintstones was the biggest movie that year.
Oh my God.
No one watches the Flintstones anymore. But then something like Fight Club was such a big flop that they fired everyone at Fox because of that movie. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, I know.
And then like literally 6 months later, everybody's seen Fight Club.
And they love
it. And so it's kind of amazing how like Office Space was like that too. And so.
And Family Guy in the TV world. It's just, totally. It just picks up steam on.
Is that what happened with. I didn't know that's what happened with Role Models too. I thought that Role Models did better.
I was going to say is that we're lucky. We did do pretty well. But it's had a really nice afterlife since then and stuff. And like,
Tim, that's the thing with it. It has heart because that was the thing I was worried about going into the film because you're like, okay, here's these two guys are going to be dressing up and then they're going to get the funny kid who looks like Gary Coleman. And then and the next thing you know, it's just like, it's just not a funny movie. But what? Your kid looks like Gary Coleman.
Yeah. He's an actual child as opposed to a 50-year-old who has a thing.
Gary Coleman,
Different
Strokes, 1981.
Yeah, but he was like 40 years old during Different Strokes.
Listen, what I'm saying is the fact that like when you see it though, and it has that relationship between both Charlotte William Scott and Paul Rudd, the humor's there obviously, but when you have a consistent tone in a comedy, like again, like 40-Year-Old Virgin did though too, but not as long, thank you very much. That is why I think the movie is.
Thank you, and I think you're right. I mean, I always like when I write stuff. I mean, that's important too. Is like you got to find that balance. But if you don't care about the characters, you don't care about the movie. And there's definitely movies that are really funny and you can laugh from beginning to end, but you don't ever watch them again because you're not invested in it. And so, like finding that balance is really important to us. But it was like, it's like you really need to care about this relationship. It can't just be. All funny all the time. So.
I was going to say, it's one of those movies that if I see is on FX or HBO when I'm flipping through, I'll stop.
Yeah, me too. Now awesome. I love, the Role Model story, it's one of our favorites that we saw that year in comedy-wise for sure.
Yeah, there's some classic comedies out there too.
But I want to jump real quick though too, because again, it took me back to what you said too, because everybody has moments and this could be the case, maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but look, Adam Sandler is his own genre.
Yeah.
At this
point.
He is. And, like, he has gone through a thing. Like, my favorite movie of his of all time is Wedding Singer.
Yeah. Probably me, too. I agree.
I love that movie, and I think that he had a thing in
this. Mine is Just Go With It.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, that's what I want to say to you. Because, again, because you're obviously from hearing you talk, you know the way that it works with the embargoes and critics and stuff like that. You know that Just Go With It wasn't critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
Now, how, as a writer, do you take that? How much...
You just binge-eat for, like, a couple days?
Do you know not to give a shit about Adam Sandler critics? You know, and how much change does he do?
Here's the thing. It's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine about this today, and I'll plug his movie, because my friend... did this great documentary called Spinning Plates that opens tomorrow.
Yeah,
in LA,
I've heard good things
in
about
New York,
that.
In Chicago. It's amazing. I've seen it way too many times. But he has gotten amazing reviews, and there's like the little nitpicky things in reviews. He's like, oh, they said this. I go, really, Joseph, would you like me to send you some of the reviews of some of the movies that I've written? And
it's that one guy in the crowd of 500 that hates you. That's the guy.
But anyway, this is what I said to him, and this is my feeling on that, is that it's an interesting thing because I'm lucky in that, I mean, I don't know what you guys think, but I've made a couple movies. I had three I have credit on, a couple that I don't. And I'm pretty happy with all of them. And, you know, it's like, it's out of your control, but I like Just Go With It. And I had a lot of fun writing it. And it's one of those things before you get to the critics, we see it and the studio sees it and other people, and you have the premiere. And so all my friends saw it, and you go to test screens and you see how it plays and how it tests. And that movie tested a 95, which is amazing.
Right. Yeah.
And we knew people liked it. We knew, it's it played and it is what it is. And people, I think critics unfairly often with Adam, I think just go after him just because. And so I was curious because I was like, look, people seem to like the movie. I'm curious what the reviews would be like. And look, they weren't great. And so to answer your question, no, it actually didn't bother me because I knew, I felt good about the movie. People I knew that I respect liked the movie. And I will say in the other stuff, it's so interesting to me. I'm always curious what people mention. Is that for a while, Role Models is the one I would always get. I get Just Go With It all the time now. And I love that people are still seeing it and whatever. And I was sitting next to you. It was funny. I was I write in restaurants a lot. And I was
You don't do Starbucks. You're actually paying for
I've moved
meals.
Up in the world.
Yeah.
I don't write unless there's a steak there.
Who's that guy at the Cheesecake Factory? He's a big-time screenwriter. Leave him alone.
And they get so excited at the restaurants when I come up with an actual person. Oh, that's so nice. It's not just him and his laptop.
It's so much different when I'm ordering restaurants. Can I have a double-double and the fries, please? Thanks.
By the way, I write it in and out as well.
Do you?
I love it in and out. Yeah. But I was writing someplace. I was actually in Orange County. I was seeing a friend, and I was stopped to get lunch, and I had some work to do. And I hear this family talking about a movie next door. And I'm like, oh my God, you have to see this funniest movie you've seen in a long time. We're recording, and then they started to say stuff, and I was took my earphones off, and I was I think they're talking about my movie. Yeah. And then they were. And I was that's kind of cool. So
you gotta,
anyway, I don't know what you guys thought about it.
I wrote. I wrote that.
But I guess the answer to your question is that I try to look at, I mean, and by the way, you never read the, which is hard too. Like, anytime you have something announced on, like, the deadline, like,
yeah.
All the comments online are always so nasty.
Of course,
like,
do. And it's hard for yourself. We deal in YouTube. So,
you just never read that. I do still, and then it makes you mad and upset. Yeah. But
I got
reviews,
shit on today for wearing a vest.
If I'm happy with the movie, reviews don't bother me. Good.
Well, I'm going to ask a question, and we'll just go with it as well, because I do want to move on to some of the other stuff that you're working on, because we only, unfortunately, have about 15 minutes left.
Did you write lines for Dan Patrick? Because that's my favorite.
There you go.
He is so funny in that movie.
This plays into it. My question actually plays into that.
Some of his stuff, yeah.
So you start with the script for Joe, just go with it, whether it be that they hired you onto it or whatnot, and you get involved with Adam Sandler's crew. Now, how much does Adam Sandler and his buddies, they have worked with that tight-knit crew.
Yeah.
How much do they say, okay, Tim, we're going to just kind of riff off what you're doing here? Like, what's the process on Adam Sandler's film?
Generally, Adam's a great guy, by the way. I'm doing a movie with him right now. He's a really sweet guy. He's very classy. He works with the same people all the time. He treats everyone great.
Yeah.
And he's a really smart guy. Is that they generally do their own stuff. And that was a situation where they're developing a script. He wasn't going to act in it. I got hired to, you know, to rewrite it and come up with, you know, kind of a new version of it.
Is this Pixel?
No, that's what I'm working on now, which I can tell you about in a second, which I'm really excited about. But I'll just go with it. You know, I wrote a script and I had a lot of fun with it. Okay. And it was one of those things where, you know, I heard that Adam loved the first half and he didn't like the second half, which got a little crazy. And we, like, met and he sort of, like, gave me notes and he kept referring to the character as Hugh Grant, who we kept sort of talking about. And prior to the meeting, I heard that, like, Adam really liked, you know, like, the first half of the script and he loved the setup and all this stuff and he wants to talk to you about it. And I was like, do you see yourself acting in this? And he's like, probably not. He goes, I love it. But, you know, I feel like I did the fake kid thing with Big Daddy and I did the fake married thing with Chuck and Larry. So I don't really want to do that again. But I think it's great. And look, I'm excited to produce it and get it made. And I was like, cool. And then he gave me a bunch of notes and I went back and did it. And it's the fastest I've ever had anything go. And I turned it in at Thanksgiving. And 2 weeks later, the producer, Heather Perry, who's awesome and works for him, I'm always up late. And so she like emailed me at like midnight. She's like, hey, you up? And I was like, yeah. She's like, can I call you? And I was like, okay. And she's like, don't tell anybody, but Sandler's doing the movie, Jennifer Aniston's doing the movie, it goes in February. And I was like, amazing. And then basically generally what happens with their stuff is that because Adam usually writes and does whatever, it's like when he engages to act in something, they kind of take over and they do their thing. In that case, and the reason I got credit on it is that, you know, for the most part, they did my script, which is awesome.
That's awesome.
He loves to improvise and stuff. And there was definitely stuff on the set and Jen and him, I think, had a nice chemistry. And there's definitely stuff that they came up with that, you know, that wasn't in my script. But for the most part, it's like, it's kind of my script. And,
your story.
And so I was pretty happy with that. Anyway, it was a fun one.
See, I'd take a date to that premiere. And then every time people laughed, they'd be like, I wrote that.
Right. All right, let's get into it.
And she's like, you're the writer. We know.
I do want to talk about Pixels. So, but before we do that, I want to talk about this. One of my favorite movies as a kid that I really loved. I was a huge Midnight Run fan.
Yeah, me too.
Huge Midnight Run fan. So the cool thing is that you were actually hired by De Niro's company to write the sequel?
I love Midnight Run. And it's funny, like I always think about like learning to write dialogue, I always think of Midnight Run.
Yeah.
And like I loved it growing up. I think I was probably like 12 or 13 when it came out. And you know, I always loved that movie. And in my head, I was like, what would a sequel to Midnight Run be? And it's funny, every time Grodin used to go on Letterman would be like, when are you going to make a sequel to Midnight Run? This is years ago. And Grodin was like, oddly enough, Universal will make more movies with me and the dog, Beethoven, but not me and De Niro.
Right.
So
yeah, it'd be like 8 Beethoven movies, right?
So anyway, I had a general meeting with De Niro's company, Tribeca, and these great guys, Brandon Brito and Megan Livers, who since become good friends of mine. And they're like, we love your writing. We'd love for you to come up with like a comic franchise for Bob. And I was like,
and you're like, Bob, you mean Robert?
Yeah, I was like, me, Mr. De Niro. And I was like, well, you guys ever talked about doing a sequel, Midnight Run? And they're like, yeah, it comes up, but we never kind of figured it out. And we were just kind of talking. And I was like, well, I mean, the obvious version would be, you know, which I think they talked about was like Jimmy Serrano gets out of prison and he comes after them. And I was like, but the thing is, that's kind of the first movie, and you're not going to make the first movie any better. So I was like, I guess the answer is you don't do that. And I was like, Jack Walsh, who De Niro's character, is a great character. And I was like, it's 20 years later. And, you know, my take on it was, you know, basically, I was like, you know, he opened up the diner at the end of the first one. But he's still who he is, and like he swore off bounty hunting. And around the time we sold it, it was like the economy sucks. And so even though he swore he'd never bounty hunt again, like, you know, every time something breaks at the diner and he doesn't really know how to run a diner very well, he like does it to pay the bills.
Yeah.
But he hates it. And so the opening of the movie, because it's also 20 years old and you gotta introduce it to modern audiences, but we had him like going on a thing And we had this character that, like you know, the Dorfler character for the first one.
Uh-huh.
Our guy, and we always pictured like a Danny McBride. It was named El Coyote, and he was the other rival bounty hunter. Yeah. And he always had these trashy women following him around with video cameras because he wanted to get his own bounty hunter reality show.
So
he was like the other guy. But I was like, well, you know, you want a new story, new villains, new whatever. But like Grodin's so great, you want to involve him somehow. I was like, well, what if it's his son? And well, if it's 20 years later, Grodin's still on the run, which is how you left the last movie. Right. They haven't seen each other since then. De Niro's got to the point he can't really do this anymore, and Grodin shows up, and he's like, look, I have a kid. He got in some trouble, kind of downplays it, and he goes, you're the only one I can trust, and, you know, find him and bring him back. And then it's like a whole other story. And the first one, they're the same age, so it's peers. And right. So for us, we're like, well, if it's a father-son story.
Yeah. What's the status of that movie right now?
Basically, I mean, you know, I hope it comes back at some point. I mean, we wanted to do it with, like, Jonah Hill. I mean, that's who I had in my head. I love the script. You know, De Niro loved the script. Yeah. You know, I think the head of Universal wasn't crazy about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think, you know, it's also, too, like, if you look at it economically, it's like, you know, it's a sequel to a 20-year-old movie that I think has a huge fan base. But if you just look at the numbers, it doesn't necessarily translate. So right. I mean,
yeah, you put that in that big studio machine, and they're like, "Oh, we're not making this opening weekend." Yeah.
Well, Tim,
yeah.
I don't mean to cut you off, but we have.
But anyway, I love working on it. It was a dream, and at some point, I hope it.
I'm sure it's fantastic.
Midnight Run 2 in theaters. 2015.
I want to bring your buddy Mark Riley in here too, because we are going to talk
Yodi.
About Pixels. And there's some here. You sit in my seat for a second. No, sit here a second. I got to run for it real quick.
Are you guys going to lapse it? Is that what's going on?
No, he's going to ask you Pixels.
Where the hell are you going? We got. You can't hold it for 5 minutes.
This is my dream coming true, everyone. Welcome to
the
Mark Riley
Show. By the way,
that
guy that just left, he totally soiled himself. Yeah. I saw wet stains on both sides of his pants when he went out the door.
It's the Mark Riley Show. We're going to talk about unopened Star Wars figures.
Yeah. What do you got? Right. Yeah, you have a bunch of those, right, Tim?
I probably do. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. No, there was, you know, we ran into each other at a party the other night, which is how we got Tim on the show, and we were talking
Mark
about Pixels.
Mark was coked out of his mind.
I was totally coked out of my mind.
That's our Yodi.
It was pretty good, actually. That was some good snow, man. But we were talking about Pixels, and Chris Columbus is directing it. And so...
Yeah. Yeah, can you kind of tease us with that? Because we're really running short on time, but I just want to
Basically, we want to make, you know, it's like we want to make like a movie that we love when we were kids. Like we want to make an old school kind of like Amblin movie. It's different for Sandler too. Like it's a comedy. I mean, and hopefully it's funny, but it's more of a big summer movie. And you know, like when we talked about, you know, like. It's interesting. If you watch Independence Day, Independence Day has like a goofy tone. I mean, the world's blowing up and stuff, but there's a lot of humor in it and there's kind of a lightness to it. And so I think tonally ours is kind of similar to that. And so it's like Ghostbusters, there's a lot of action. And it basically is, it's the quickest way to say it, it's like Ghostbusters with big 80s video games characters.
Yeah.
So it's like Pac-Man and Centipede and Donkey Kong attacking the world. There was a short film called Pixels about that. It makes sense why that happens in the movie, and you'll have to see it. But anyway, I've been having so much fun working on it. Chris is the nicest guy in the world.
Columbus is directing it.
Yeah, and he wrote, if you don't know him, he wrote Goonies and Gremlins and Sherlock Holmes and directed Harry Potter.
Go ahead and put his number in my iPhone
stop. Well, I joke with my brother every day when I talk to Chris, I have to stop myself from saying, will you be my best friend?
Yeah.
Can we hang out?
So there was something you know about schmozno.com, we're a movie website and everything. Now, we heard through the grapevine, through one of our sources, that Sandler is attached to starring it.
Adam Sandler is starring it.
Yeah, he is. Okay.
Is that the project that you had referenced that you were now working?
Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Look at me tying bows over here, guys.
And that's confirmed now that he's maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if the deals are done, but he's producing it and he's starring in it, and we're hoping to go in the spring, and I think it's going to come out the biggest summer of all time in
2015
with Star Wars, Avengers, and Jurassic Park, and Terminator.
Star Wars is December now.
Yeah, they go back and forth. I ran to one of the producers and I was asking.
There's no way they can do it. You think
I think the more time goes on and that stuff today. But
there's only so much shit you can watch explode before you need something to laugh at during the summer. So it'll be right in your wheelhouse. Well,
hopefully we'll be some sort of counter-programming. One original movie.
Thank you so much for joining us today. You're an incredible, incredible guest. Hearing everything that you've gone through, you have to come back and talk more about you're doing as far as movies in general, but we got to get to Kathy Kelly here.
Uh-oh.
We got to figure it out. But guys, make sure, first of all, follow Timothy Dowling, at Timothy Dowling. And again, check out his movies. What's the next one coming out is going to be?
Probably Pixels.
Cool.
Where should I send my Veronica Mars fan fiction? Just tweet it to
you. You should probably tweet it
to me. I'll tweet it. Yeah. Say no more.
Because I have nothing to do with that show, so you should probably tweet it to me.
And you got to make sure, too, when Pixels comes out, you come back and visit
us. Yeah, I'd love to. Okay, that'd be great, guys. Thank you so much.
So Timothy, Tim, who do you think... Ellis is not in the running. So who do you think
Thanks.
Cassie
asshole.
Is going. You're the one that's sitting. Who do you think that she's going to? Is she going to go with the pit boss, Ken Napsok, who's the Russian mobster to the left? Yeah. Mm. Is she going to go with the wild man, Josh McCuga? Is she going to go with Mark Riley, your buddy?
Riley's,
or is she going to go with Finstock, who you don't know, so
Riley's
that doesn't
play
doesn't
it cool
Finstock
right
isn't
now
here.
I really go with the dark horse, Ellis. I feel like
he's
the
not
chemistry
here
between them.
He's not
is,
in it. He really wants it.
All
right, so okay. Kathy.
Can I pitch my date? I was quiet because I was thinking about this a lot.
Okay, all right.
Going off LARPing, I really want it to be at medieval times.
Okay.
Oh, that's
yeah
good.
Right.
There's
okay
one in
okay
Orange
okay
County,
I
believe.
I like it.
And I think it should be a bachelor-style date where everyone goes on it, but
oh
then people get cut through.
Oh, there's roses. Oh,
I love this. Can you guys do this?
It's like a tournament. Like it's a tournament within a tournament.
There will be jousting involved.
It sounds fantastic, but organizing it is going to be a nightmare and not realistic.
Okay,
and,
by
and,
medieval
and
times,
she's getting out of and
Buffalo
she's,
Wild
she's
Wings
getting out of she's getting out of a date with one person. I'm not going to let it happen. So you have to pick one person to go on the date with.
Christian, you're too smart.
I know. One person to go on the date with.
Don't stroke that ego.
Yeah, one person to go on the date with. Who is it going to be? We have Copster's going to tape it. Josh the intern's going to tape it. Who are you going to take on the date?
I don't know now.
Come on, you have to. You have to.
It's tough.
Come on. You're going to go on a date with this
person.
Will
you be my Yenta? Will you pick?
No, I'm not going to pick for you. This is you. Look, who you can go out with Mark Riley, Ken Napsok. This is your girlfriends are sitting around and going, you have four guys to choose from.
Yeah.
I know.
Beard Mask, Mark Riley, Ken Napsok. Look, or Josh McCuga. Here's your pick. You have 5 seconds, and you just got to say it. Five, four, three.
Did you bring
two,
cookies?
One. Come on,
dude. She's awesome at this.
We got 2 minutes left.
You're killing me.
In the meantime, make sure you follow all of us at Twitter.
I'm going to pick. I'm going to pick
you're
for you.
Gonna
it's
you're
going to
go
on a date
yeah
with
yeah
this person.
I want you to pick.
No, she's
gonna
pick. No.
You know I'm not going to pick you. You're going everybody. You got, this is it.
You're picking.
All right,
you're picking.
Going out on a date with Mark Riley.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it. You're going on a date with Mark Riley. All right, guys. So she will be going out with our website editor in chief, and guys, make sure you follow at Timothy Dowling. Make sure at Schmoes No Ken Napsok. Check out the Napsok files. Check out Catherine Kelly at Catherine Kelly.
I'm texting
thank
my mom
Catherine
that Kathy Kelly is going out with a Mark.
Yes, exactly. At Josh McCuga and is all that our new intern at Cobbs is it Cobster Reviews. At Cobster Reviews. All right, so make sure you check him out. And guys, great show. Peace out, Mother Effs.
Hey, Steve, I'm so mad. I'm so mad.
You're listening to the Toad Hop Network, radio worth watching.